So you got to go there and do the right thing. Thank you to Peter Godbold at Godbold Computers for keeping the computers at the home studio running. Also, thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Louder Productions here in Sydney. Thank you for the music. You rock, my friend. And our mods and our bloggers, the news ninjas, Gene and Susan, thank you so much. And the mods in the chat room. And if you haven't been to our chat room, you got to go. You got to go. This is a group of intelligent people that know how to have some fun while talking about disturbing issues. So I'm going to try and get maybe some audio bites for tomorrow from Mr. Rudd as he goes and does the whole media thing the day after. And I don't know. Who knows what we'll have tomorrow. So, folks, thank you for spending this hour with me today. I so enjoy it. Hope to hear from you in the email, john@headonradionetwork.com. We'll see you tomorrow. Be good. Be green.
Listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. Three more American servicemen have been killed west of Baghdad, two Marines and one soldier, for a total of 54 U.S. casualties so far in December. The Army Chief of Staff is proposing an increase in the size of the Army and greater flexibility in the use of reserves. The Army currently has 500,000 troops. Tens of thousands of Hamas backers rallied today in Gaza in support of Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh, who survived an assassination attempt by gunmen who attacked his convoy. Haniyeh was uninjured, but one of his bodyguards was killed and one of his sons was among the 20 people wounded in the attack. The Lebanese Prime Minister is in Moscow to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin and Arab ambassadors and discuss relations between Lebanon and Syria in advance of the Syrian president's visit to Russia next week. After 2 days of talks in Beijing, U.S. trade delegates to China were able to open negotiations on key issues such as the stabilization of Chinese currency rates and a crackdown on widespread copyright abuses in China. However, much work still needs to be done to reduce the massive U.S. trade deficit with China, which could reach a record $240 billion this year. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is asking Congress to authorize tens of millions of dollars to increase the security forces of Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas in hopes of reducing the violence and tensions currently plaguing Palestine. Optimistic news from Washington, D.C., where South Dakota Senator Tim Johnson is recovering without complications from emergency surgery Wednesday night after suffering a brain hemorrhage. He remains in critical condition. Also in the nation's capital today, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld was praised by President Bush for his service to the nation as he called on Americans to spend more heavily on defense. A delegation of 10 U.S. lawmakers who favor the easing of sanctions against Cuba arrived in Havana today for a 3-day visit. Meanwhile, U.S. intelligence chief John Negroponte is telling the Washington Post that everything he's seen indicates that Cuban President Fidel Castro is dying. Around 300 people have reportedly become sick, and three have been hospitalized since last Saturday after eating in an Olive Garden restaurant in northeast Indianapolis. A spokesman for the Marion County Health Department says their symptoms include nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The U.S. and 23 other countries have joined together to expand an international anti-malaria program started by President George Bush last year. The $1.2 billion effort is focused on halting the spread of malaria through the use of mosquito nets and abatement programs. Worldwide, more than 1 million people die from malaria infections each year. In a successful spacewalk yesterday, two Discovery astronauts rewired half of the International Space Station. Preparations are now being made for tomorrow's third and final spacewalk, during which they'll try to rewire the other half. Nintendo is now recalling 3.2 million wrist straps on its Wii computer game system after numerous complaints that its wand-like hand controllers were flying out of the hands of energetic players. Consumer inflation was unchanged in November, largely due to big declines in energy costs. The U.S. and China have agreed to allow both NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange to open formal business offices in China. Light sweet crude is trading at $63.23 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones is up 29 points at 12,445. The NASDAQ is up 3 points at 2457, and the S&P 500 is up 2 points at 1427. There's more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall. It's now
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Well, we've made it to another Friday, haven't we? I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. And we're going to... Oh, I don't know. We'll be all over the place tonight. What do we got going on here? The Palestinians are devolving into civil war. Don't eat the lettuce. Jesus, what a world. More dead in Iraq. But, you know, that's an everyday kind of thing, the more dead in Iraq thing. You know, why would we want to do something like end a war that's just... But, you know, I mean, that's how it is. A program note for you, if you will. Coming up this Tuesday evening, right at the beginning of the program, we're going to be joined by several members of the Kentucky Nurses Association. They are also members of, they also have membership within West Virginia, and will be joined with some membership from the West Virginia Nurses Association. If you've been following the news, and you have because you listen to this program, so you can't help but be interested in news and current events and politics and culture, society as a whole. You know, we talk a lot about the healthcare crisis. Well, part and parcel of the healthcare crisis is the healthcare crisis that is manufactured. Yeah, no kidding. Manufactured by the corporations that run America's hospitals. And part of that crisis lies in the way that the nursing staff is treated. Oh, sure. I mean, you go to the doctor and you wait, and you know, what's the statistic? Most doctors' time with a patient on average is something slightly over 5 minutes. Odds are, if your life is in trouble, it's a nurse that's going to save you. And so we'll be talking to some union nurses on Tuesday about the fight that they've got going on with hospital corporation that for some reason or another doesn't seem to understand the meaning of a contract. Now, you sign a contract. Well, I mean, look at cell phones. What happens to you if you break your cell phone contract? You get tormented for breaching the contract, right? And there are the very nature of contracts is at the heart of a civilized society that can do business in it. Wait, here's a phrase for the here's a phrase for the right wingers in a free market. If contracts are worthless, the free market is a dead thing. Capitalism isn't worth a damn if a contract doesn't mean anything. And so you're gonna hear a story, an account Tuesday night of what contracts mean to a particular hospital corporation. They got a signed contract with a group of nurses, and from almost the moment before the ink dried on the contract, they've been trying to breach it. And you'll be amazed. So make sure you're here for the Tuesday evening show shortly after the very beginning of the program, 6 o'clock Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific. God only knows what in Arizona. I don't know what is Arizona. Somebody help me with the math on Arizona. It's like Indiana or something, and daylight savings time, and they don't do it, and just weird. But anyway, we're going to have a fascinating conversation Tuesday evening. I hope you'll join us. Let's start out with something a little bit fun. You know, there's nothing quite as enjoyable as watching the American Family Association hop up and down like the monkeys that they are. And this is one of their better ones. I know we're dealing with some pretty humorless individuals in the American Family Association, but the American Family Association is now, well, who aren't they mad at? But lately they're mad at CBS. Now, God knows CBS has plenty of things to be mad at, as far as I'm concerned. But in the case of the American Family Association, they're mad at them over a show called Two and a Half Men. Now, Two and a Half Men is, it's a comedy. And it is, Charlie Sheen is in it, and Charlie Sheen plays a sort of crass guy who thinks not so much with his brain, but with some other part of his anatomy.
He's an average guy.
Oh, okay, thank you, Agnes, he's an average guy. Fight me. But no, so I get this in the inbox today. Dear Bob, CBS and actor Charlie Sheen have used the Christmas season to ridicule and mock Christ, Christmas, and Christians. CBS approved actor Charlie Sheen's vulgar adaptation of a favorite Christian Christmas carol. Okay, here's the vulgar adaptation.
Joy to the world, I'm getting laid. I'm getting laid tonight. We'll light the Yule log, deck the halls, and then we'll play some jingle balls. It's been a real long wait, This is our second date. It's Christmas Eve and I'm getting late.
I don't care who you are. That's funny.
I'm mixing up the eggnog. You want this broad lit up or just slightly glowing?
Well, let's see. We're celebrating peace on earth and goodwill towards all mankind, so let's get her plowed.
Hallelujah.
Gloria. Tonight I'm boinking Gloria.
I don't care who you are. That's funny. Oh my God. So that. So you know, they once again, every time they invite me to send an email, I do. Today I sent one to Les Moonves of CBS, telling them that it was my pleasure to use the webmail server of the American Family Association to politely inform him that the American Family Association's a bunch of goobers, humorless goobers at that. What do you ever wonder? Do you ever wonder what kind of world we would live in if the American Family Association and Focus on the Family actually got their way? Would we be allowed to laugh? I mean, I often think that these fundies, these freaks, these weirdos, these people who are divorced from reality, would like to. Okay, first obligatory movie reference of the evening: The Name of the Rose. Great movie. What was it? Sean Connery, a very young. What's his name? The kid that as a kid worked up a perfect Jack Nicholson. Whatever. But the monks are dying off, and it turns out at the end of the movie, come on, it's 15 years old. I'm not going to ruin it for anybody. It's all because there was a humorless abbot or whatever that had a poisoned book. He poisoned the pages of a book because the book was making people laugh. These are some of the most singularly humorous SOBs that I have ever seen in my life. Yeah, they talk about the joy of the season. They don't know the meaning of the word joy. Part of joy is letting up and laughing. These people that want we need a traditional Christmas. Do these goobers even halfway understand that a traditional Christmas, where the tradition began, about 90% of it had to do with getting absolutely loaded for two solid weeks? Yeah, Christian Slater, thank you. I tell you what, speaking of places whence came the origins of our Christmas traditions, our good friend Andy in the UK, in Wales, is with us. Andy, happy holidays to you. God rest you merry, gentlemen.
Well, I won't be getting merry because I don't drink, but yes, that sort of thing.
Isn't that true? Isn't that true? I mean, most of the Christmas tradition as it developed in merry oldie involved getting loaded?
Yeah, basically. I mean, let's face it, it's pretty cold at this time of year, and people got drunk to stay warm. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, you had a little ice age going on. You know, all kinds of nastiness.
Well, remember, we're on the same latitude as Moscow here, yeah?
Right. You just happen to have the benefit of a downflowing...
A slowly dying warm current, I might point out.
Yes, highly salinated, slowly dying, yeah.
But if you want to hear something odd about December, and if people don't believe global warming... tell that to my fuchsias. They're still flowering in the back garden.
Your fuchsias are still flowering?
Yeah, they've still got... They've kept the flowers they started with in summer. A few have dropped off, but most of them are still there, and they're still making new flowers. And there's oak trees in the park near here that have still got autumn's leaves, and they're also growing next year's leaves already.
And, of course, you're in Wales, and that's a fairly mountainous, high-elevation area,
well,
isn't it?
I've got to admit, I'm down on the south coast of Wales, but you get a lot of cold wind. You know, and this year, it's been wet and warm since end of October right up until now. It's just started getting cold today.
Is that going to play havoc with your spring?
Probably. Daffodils are up already.
No.
Yep.
That's
I've
bizarre.
I've never seen that happen before.
That's truly bizarre. I mean, I thought... Well, it's weird here too, Andy. I mean, this is West Virginia. I'm at roughly 2,000 feet elevation.
Right.
And it's been shorts and a t-shirt for the last 2 days.
Yeah, it's all craziness. But on to some more craziness.
Yes, absolutely.
I've got to get this off my chest. I've been out of contact for a bit because I've been offline, and I'm not going to advertise the company I'm with because they don't deserve it, quite frankly.
Two tomato tins and a string internet service provider.
I'd be better off with that, to be honest with you. Just tap out Morse code and wait for the response. But no, we've had some interesting news over here about a serious fraud office investigation.
Yes.
They're like your internal audit organ bureau or whatever they're called. I can't remember.
General Accounting Office.
That's the one. They all have such stupid names. But yeah, the serious fraud office have been investigating a deal into a Saudi arms contract.
Do tell.
Done during Thatcher's reign. Nothing she did was good, really, quite honestly. But, you know, basically they've been investigating whether or not BAE Systems, which is one of the biggest employers in Britain, makes weapon systems like the Eurofighter and stuff like that, which I might point out is rubbish, but it's not as rubbish as your new Joint Strike Fighter is. The Eurofighter only cost a few billion to develop, and it'll sell, you know. The Joint Strike Fighter has cost hundreds, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And it's still not even working. But anyway, onto the more important thing. But yeah, they're investigating Saudi connections and fraud and slush funds and all that lovely business, you know, prostitutes and Mercedes paid for by the company and ultimately paid for by the taxpayer, because BAE is supported by us, the taxpayer. Just like every other weapons giant. And recently,
Merry Christmas, you know. That's the thing. It's Merry Christmas every daggum day for the weapons merchants and the weapons manufacturers.
Oh,
and,
yeah. Good and money though, isn't it? But yeah, I mean,
nice work if you can get it. Yeah.
Well, yeah. The fraud office has actually got hold of Swiss bank accounts. They've got access to Swiss bank accounts, which I thought was unprecedented.
One would think, that just doesn't happen.
Yeah, they don't like opening those things. But yeah, they got access to it, and so the Saudis said, ooh, the new deal we've just signed, £10 billion worth, is going to go to the French if you don't stop this investigation. And 3 or 4 days later, for interests that are in the general interest of Britain, they stopped the investigation. Tony Blair did. And it had nothing to do with the fact that the £10 billion deal would go to France or America if we decided that we were above deception and...
No.
And corruption.
No, it couldn't have anything to do with that, could it?
No.
No, what was the poodle's excuse?
Oh, well, we're not allowed to know. We've got to take their word for it, Bob, because, you see, the security services were the ones that came up with the reason, and obviously we can't let people know what that reason is. I mean, we know what the reason is. The reason is that if we piss off the Saudis won't work with us, and we won't know about the terrorists that they have growing in their country that are going to come and attack us. That's the reason. But
you know,
the real reason is money, pure and simple.
You want it, and they have it.
Well, that's the thing. You know, BAE says, oh, no, if you take the moral high ground, then we're going to lose jobs because we'll lose money, which is rubbish because, you know, Saudi Arabia don't want the Eurofighters, fine, then we'll build something else for someone else. You know, it's not a problem. If BAE were serious about appearing whiter than white, it wouldn't be a problem. But it's because there's fraud going on, and it's because they want to keep the money rolling in because they're getting kickbacks, and it makes me really angry.
Well, and you've got a right to be angry, Andy. I don't want anyone thinking that what I'm about to say is in any way racially motivated. It's not. I'm getting so damn sick of the Saudis I could just bust. I'm tired of civilized countries getting wagged by these. I understand you've got a, you know, there's the monarchy there in Britain, but it's not quite the same as the House of Ibn Saud.
Well, no, I mean, we have a monarch who's a formalized head of state, and we had a revolution, got rid of the king, then went, oh, hang on a minute, if we get rid of the king, we end up with, like, idiots like Cromwell.
Yeah.
And ultimately idiots like George Bush. So let's get the king back, but limit their powers, and basically pay them a wage to be there, and then everyone will remain loyal to the king or the queen, and that way we don't have revolutions all the time, and we have a stable system.
Yeah, I mean... America thinks that because we had one civil war. You guys have written a book of them.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, I mean, we've had civil wars in pretty much every nation of the world.
Good God. We're the experts on... You're incorrigible, you know that?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Sorry. not that sorry, though. But no, the whole situation is despicable. It's yet another example of why the ruling class don't give a damn about us. And remember, everybody, it is the ruling class. It's all the ruling class. and they're out to screw you and me and everyone else.
Yeah, and whether you call it a democracy or a constitutional monarchy or anarcho-syndicalism, sooner or later, or, you know, the dictatorship of the proletariat, let's be honest, Andy, eventually there develops a ruling class.
Well, yeah, I mean, arguably I'd say that the Soviet reference that you managed to kind of slip in there is not... The proletariat never were the ruling class in Russia, and that it just didn't happen. Stalin and
right. That's what I'm saying. You can baptize it with any name you want, but
ultimately we have to push for a more socially democratic system, and we're never going to achieve it in our lifetimes, and we'll probably never achieve ultimately perfect society ever. You know what I mean?
Right.
We need to move. We need to start moving in the right direction, and we're not going to keep moving in the right. We're not going to move in the right direction unless we get rid of these vicious old dinosaurs that are determined to ruin everything. And that doesn't just mean old people. I mean, you know, they have the new generation of ruling class coming on.
Their names are Paris Hilton.
Well, that's the only hope I have, Bob.
Paris Hilton is your only hope?
Well, think about it. What happens when people like her are in charge? It's our turn.
True enough. Yeah, the dictatorship of the Anna Nicole Smith. Woo!
Yeah.
Well, let me just ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Is there we recently got humiliated over here, Andy, because it turns out and you know, it's one of those moments where I realize that while I'm not a big one for tooting my own trumpet, you can listen to this program and know 2 weeks ahead of time things that are going to go down by virtue of extrapolation, or you can wait for CNN to drop a headline in your lap like Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah has read the riot act to Vice President Dick Cheney. Can you imagine, Andy? Can you imagine a British Prime Minister or an American Vice President being hauled in front of a tin pot dictator like the King of Saudi Arabia and dressed down?
Yeah, right. I mean,
I don't like Dick Cheney, but it's nationally humiliating to me.
Of course it is, but I mean the reason you're in that situation is because of Dick Cheney. I mean, you know, let's be honest here, George Bush has never been anything more than a figurehead anyway. I mean, as much as he's president and gets to decide, what does he decide on? He decides on what Dick Cheney gives him the choices of.
Yeah, the horse by the door or no horse at all.
Well, yeah, the Dick Cheney says, you know, here's the choice. Do we attack Iraq or do we act like total cowards and make the French laugh at us and not attack Iraq?
No, we can't be cowards.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, I mean, he got hauled up by, let's be honest, he wasn't hauled up as Vice President of the United States, sorry, slip of the tongue. President of the United States. He was hauled up as a controlling interest in the oil industry. I mean, that's what it was about. It wasn't the position he's in, you know what I mean? It was the fact that they control the oil industry. He's the one that's told what to do at that end. So he gets called up in front of them and dressed down. I mean, he's endangered their position. What do you expect them to do? I mean, if I was... Look, put it this way, right? I don't like the House of Saud. I think they're loathsome. They're just as bad as Kim Jong-il. But if I was one of them, I'd be seriously angry at George Bush and Dick Cheney right now as well.
Well, that's... I mean, yeah, it's not something that's incomprehensible. They are unable to defend themselves.
Well, they've been fighting a civil war for the last 10 years.
Yeah, well,
very low level. I mean, it's not Iraq civil war, but it's a low level civil war, and it's not ending.
And it's not necessarily being funded by Al Qaeda. There's some talk that some of it's funded by Iran, but that's just needling.
Some of it's funded by rich Saudis who want to depose the king and take over. Some of it's funded by religious fanatics of various kinds.
You ever get the idea that monarchy's operating about where the English monarchy was, say, about 15th century?
Yeah.
You know, right around just before Henry VII.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, basically, I mean, well, you know, I mean, it's hard to even say that they're a monarchy. I mean, they're the Royal House of Saud because we said so. And I mean, we in the British imperial sense. And literally, that's true. And then later on, the Americans came along and said, yeah, we'll guarantee your security in exchange for oil. And that's literally true. So the only reason they exist is because of our government. So ultimately, you know, if anything goes down and they fall, it's our fault. And if they decide to call us up and dress us down, then, well, we deserve it because we put them in that situation.
Well, it,
you know? Let's face it, Bob. I mean, the problems in the world are America's problems first and foremost, and Britain's problem and Israel's problem secondly, because we follow you every time. Let's stop this. We follow you. They, my ruling class, and Israel's ruling class, follow
my ruling class. Yeah.
Yeah,
Careful. You almost made me say cloths, okay? I mean, it rubs off, Andy.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. I'm not being too posh for you. I could talk like a Londoner.
No, that would be even worse. I'm a verbal chameleon. You've got to be careful. But well, no, you're absolutely right. It's I have this conversation from time to time with conservatives that I run across, and they'll say things like, "Well, he's your president too."
No, he's not.
No, he's not. Based on Nuremberg, I am compelled to disavow myself from every action the man has taken.
Yeah, I mean, even if you didn't want to go that far, you can say he was never elected anyway, so he's not anyone's president. But yeah, on a personal opinion basis, if you choose to follow the Nuremberg principles and the ideals laid down in the UN Charter of Human Rights, which your country signed up to as well as mine, making you and every other citizen of the United States, just like me and every other subject of Her Majesty, responsible for our own actions and responsible for the orders that we're given that we follow. If we decide to help them use the gas chambers, then we're guilty. And if we don't want to help them use the gas chambers and we don't do anything about it, then we're guilty by, you know, omission and guilty by not stepping in and doing anything.
Yeah,
like the German people were guilty.
Yeah, and you know, I still maintain that at some point in time, America is going to have to come to terms with it. To a certain extent, Great Britain has worked on coming to terms with it.
Well, Great Britain, the disparity between what our ruling class do and what our people think is much, much wider than your version of it. I mean, we have about a 5% group that will just follow whatever government's in charge and don't care, and you have almost 20 or 30% of your population that will do that. And you know, that means that in Britain, it's actually the government can still do whatever the hell it likes, because they're always going to, just like your government will, but it's very rarely approved of, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So at least in Britain, the people can be, you know, arguably it's difficult to blame the people of Britain for the government's choices and the war in Iraq and all that sort of stuff, because we didn't want any of that.
Well, you took to the streets to try to manifest your displeasure in your millions.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, they're the biggest protest Britain's ever had over anything. The government were all angry because the BBC were reporting, you know, a million people in the street. And the government said, well, why are you reporting that? And the BBC said, well, because we've taken the figures from the Metropolitan Police, and that's what they're saying. And the people who are actually marching reckon there's 3 million people in the street. So which number do you want us to use? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they couldn't believe it. They just couldn't believe it. They thought that the British public were either apathetic or would actually be believing 45 minutes of weapons of mass destruction claim. It was all ridiculous, you know, and we knew that. And to be honest, most of the American people knew it too, but you live in a society that's been much more heavily indoctrinated into war fever. I mean, you know, war is a spectator sport in America. In Britain, it's distasteful, and we don't want to see it. But in America, some parts of America, it's like, yeah, nuke them till they glow, then shoot them in the dark.
Yeah, it is. I'm ashamed of that, Andy.
Well,
but
don't be ashamed of it, because it's not your fault individually, Bob. Neither it's not the fault of the silly.
No, but these are supposed to be my fellow Americans. I mean, that's what I've had from the time that I could understand language.
That's what I mean. Your entire system has been set up. Your education system, everything. It's all a big con. You know, look, the Declaration of Independence and all that was a statement of tax exemption. I'm sorry, but it was, okay? The Bill of Rights was a stop the people rebelling and executing all the nouveau riche ruling class that had elected themselves, your founding fathers, that are, for some reason, generally applauded in the United States. But they were all a bunch of slave owners. All men are held equal under God. Slave owners. Equal under God. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No. It's far from perfect. And I must admit, I maintain a more... genial view of some of these people. You know,
well,
obviously John Adams wasn't a slave owner.
Well, some
Samuel Adams.
Bad, but they associated with people who were, and they didn't work hard enough to stop it, and that makes them guilty by association. And you know, I mean, look at the savage Indian myth. John Wayne, and was quoted in a film, the only good Comanches are dead Comanche. Well, who were the savage killers in the West? Were they the natives, or were they the white settlers? Because we know what's who killed the most.
Well, you recently had a ceremony there in the UK honoring
leader.
A Native American leader who came over there and died over there. Interestingly, the language itself was reborn. It was a I can't remember the language now. But it was basically reconstructed from fragments. And the language was first spoken for the first time 200-300 years there on English soil, and you know it's not just what happened when Philip Sheridan, you know, the only good Indian is a dead Indian, got to the West. It's what happened on the Chesapeake shoreline.
Yeah, I mean, it goes all the way back. It goes back to the Puritans. But the problem is the Puritans were doing it because they were crazed religious fanatics. The ruling class of America took over and did it because they want to take the money. And you've been sold a bill of goods ever since. You know, I mean, the whole ethos of Hollywood, look at how it changed after the riots in the 60s and 70s. Suddenly cop shows and army shows, the good guys were always the army. It didn't matter where they were or who they were shooting. They were always the good guys. The cops were always the good guys. But that happened all after the Watts riots and things like that. It's all social control, and the sooner people wake up and realize, then the better. Because they,
well, you know, one of the issues for me, Andy, is that element of social in the United States, we can't do anything by committee. We have a hard time figuring out what to have lunch if there's more than four people involved.
Mm.
So I have a hard time believing that there's some sort of a concerted effort. I'm more concerned with the way the culture has evolved, so that you wind up with these separate strands of groupthink that wind up going in the same direction. Because with Hollywood, for instance, the reason you get three cop shows is because one cop show was successful and there's not enough originality in Hollywood to come up with two other ideas. So you just replicate the thing two times over.
Go back a step. Who came up with the idea for the first cop show? Was it just some guy, or was it somebody who works for the government? Because we know CNN has news anchors right now who are on the TV that work for the military. That's a fact.
Yeah, well, no,
and
that
it's
isn't.
Been like that since X, and so has Fox News, and all of them. They have their PSYOPs divisions. What is it, the Lerner Group? They're a group you have to watch out for.
Well, who's the guy who was one of the yammerers of the days gone by? The Gong Show. The Gong Show. Doggone, I lost his name again. Chuck Barris. Chuck Barris wrote a memoir and said, look, I was a CIA agent for decades.
Yeah, and loads of them are. I mean, damn it.
You know, Jack Webb.
Here's the story. Kuwait, Gulf War 91. Girl comes up and starts crying about 500 babies being ripped out of incubators and left to die on the floor of the hospital she volunteered in. Okay, she was the ambassador of Kuwait's daughter. She never worked in a hospital. The hospital was not a specialist infant unit that had 500 premature babies. In the whole of Kuwait, do you know what the population of Kuwait is?
Not
enough to have 500 premature babies
total.
Yeah?
Yeah, because statistically impossible. You're right.
Yeah, basically. It was made up by this PR group, the same PR group that have been involved in Kosovo, in the Yugoslav wars before that, that are involved in the Iraq war now. They make money off selling lies. Those lies come to us through the news media, like the mainstream media. That's why they're never believable. That's why, you know, you have news and then you have the stuff they sell us. I'm getting a bit excited.
That's okay. I mean, we've decided we're not going to bleep anybody anymore. This is the internet.
Oh, good. Okay, well, I'll just let it go the next time. No, I won't. Agnes will disapprove. But
well, you are subject to that, Andy.
Yeah, I don't want to get the long range to kill it. I mean, you know, we've got to accept the fact that that idea of, oh, what, you've got a conspiracy theory? Yes, damn it, I've got a conspiracy theory. They conspire purposefully and willfully to defraud us of our lives and our worth. And that's not wealth, that's our worth. Because all they want is for us to be back in the age of Dickens, where we have no rights, we can rot.
Please, sir, may I have another? Yeah.
Yeah, that's all they want. It's not much to ask, is it, for everybody in the world to be poor except for them and their friends. That's what they want, okay? And they will work just as hard as you or I will work to protect our family. They will work to protect what they consider important. Because remember, these people don't give a damn about their family, their wives, their kids, nothing like that. The only thing that they value is money.
Well, I hate some of the linguistic stuff. You know, you've used the phrase conspiracy theory. Thanks to the people who believe that Adam and Eve rode to church on the back of a dinosaur and that snakes talk in trees. Thanks to this gang, evolution's only a theory. And then you get this phrase, conspiracy theory. Well, you know, damn it, the theory is a step on the road to factual proof. Now,
well, that's the thing, and that's why I'm proud of people saying derisively that I have conspiracy theories. Because you know what? If two people who are involved in either business or politics are talking together, they're conspiring.
Well, yeah, I know the legal definition here, and it's of conspiracy, and it's
beyond the legal definition.
Well, no, but it's taken from the common law definition, and that is two people agreeing to do an illegal thing, and only two or more, and only one of them has to take a substantial step toward the accomplishment of the goal, and everybody is then enwrapped in the conspiracy. Well, you know, here's a classic conspiracy theory. The Medicare Part D prescription drug program, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
The vote for that was supposed to be open for like, you know, an hour.
Yeah.
Was held open for something like 12. Yeah. The final vote was taken after midnight, if I'm not mistaken. Now, the bill itself was not written by any elected member of Congress.
No, it was
written by a pharmaceutical lobbyist in a corner suite on K Street.
Yep.
Okay. Now they went to people like Tom DeLay,
mm-hmm.
and they said, "This is the bill we want.
Here's some money.
We will contribute to." And that's the thing. We talk about conspiracy theories, but it's the stuff that leads up to the conspiracies that we have legalized.
Well, the point is that almost everything that anyone would derive as a conspiracy theory that your government has done is factually provable. So it's not really a theory when you have facts. You know, I mean, that's the whole point of theory. You have a theory, you look for facts. If it proves it, then you're right. If it doesn't, then you're wrong. That's what science is all about. And that's why the Christians don't like it, because they can't get their heads around that basic concept of you know, provable, repeatable experiment. But, you know, look, we're engaged in a struggle, whether we like it or not, whether we want to open our eyes or not. We're engaged in a struggle that the rich will use the term class warfare, as if, like, they're not engaged in class warfare against us.
Right.
And, you know, we're stuck with the idea of unions taking our money and not providing anything to us. Who came up with that idea, Bob? Was that somebody who's for unions or somebody who's against it?
Oh, look, there are think tanks out there with millions and millions of dollars underneath them that just sit around coming up with negative ways to talk about working people.
Yeah, basically. I mean, look at the way, just look at the way the average Joe is portrayed in Hollywood and on TV in America. Generally amiable, genial, sometimes a little funny, not too bright.
Yeah, and that's why we call them Joe and Jane Sixpack. All they have in their miserable lives of quiet desperation is the occasional opportunity to crack open a six pack of really bad American beer and get hammered.
Yeah, you know, that's
our life.
But you know, and I would argue that probably doesn't exist. You know, first of all, if you're at that point of the social scale, you don't have time to sit down and have a beer because you're either working or sleeping. You know, and if you're not working, you're out on the streets in America because your country is frankly disgusting and has a filthy attitude towards its own people. You know, I mean, this is what makes me sick every time I hear somebody who's got an American accent and is representing your government standing up and saying how you're the most civilized nation on the world.
We're the greatest nation on earth.
Well, guess what? I've got news for you.
We're not.
Apart from, let's leave out the Northern Europe, because you'll always go, you Europeans, you're lying, it's a long way away. No, Cuba, okay? America comes 42nd out of 50 countries in the West, so-called civilized world, on baby infant mortality. 42nd out of 50.
Yeah, and similarly on maternal death.
That's only like 2 or 3 points higher than Haiti, which the American government has been destroying for the past 30 years. There's an interesting war nobody talks about, the war on Haiti.
Sure. No, you're not saying anything I don't know to be fact.
And then
that's, you know, you've had ISP problems. I don't know if you got to hear Dennis Kucinich a couple of nights ago.
No, I've been for 2 weeks almost.
No, that's just that must have just driven you nuts.
Yeah,
well,
I bought an upgrade. Damn it.
Oh. Well,
I know. I knew when I did it.
Well, when you go back, the website, headonradionetwork.com, the interview with, it's a standalone now. The interview with Dennis Kucinich. Go and listen to it. You might actually hear an American politician that sounds like somebody who understands what's going on.
I've heard Mr. Kucinich speak before. I've heard him talk to Stephanie Miller, but I've heard him talking as well. There was something on the web, and yeah, he sounds like a guy that knows what's going on. And what I tell him is not to get any kind of aircraft at all.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Barack Obama has opined on that subject, Andy.
He's certainly not my choice for president.
No, he needs to stay out of planes too, though.
Well, he said, you know, look, I'm concerned about getting shot. He said it straight up, and of course, you know, he delivered that beautiful speech about the audacity of hope at the 2004 Democratic National Convention, and I was on the air at the time, and I said, stay, you know, white dude will shoot you, Barack, okay?
Yeah, stay behind the bulletproof glass.
Right, exactly.
He doesn't get much in the way of Secret Service protection, does he?
Not really to speak of.
The dudes that might or might not jump in the way.
Well, I mean, I was he spoke at our statewide Democratic Party dinner a couple of months ago, and they walked right past us, be able to stop and chat with him, say, hi, how are you, that kind of thing.
Right.
And, of course, you know, I'm not exactly a threatening-looking guy.
No.
But, no, it wasn't like the guys with the earpieces were just, you know, surrounding him or anything.
Okay. I mean, him, the independent from Vermont, all of them need to watch out. Because they're socialists, and you know what happens to... You've got a tradition of what happens to socialists in America. The same thing that the people used to do to black people in the South.
Yeah, kill them.
Yeah, inconvenient deaths, and we didn't see nothing.
Exactly. Well, you know, it gets... Paul Wellstone always comes to mind in any kind of conversation along these lines.
Yeah,
no
one's going to convince me he wasn't killed. I mean, he was openly talking about, like, redistributing wealth, and then suddenly he dies in a plane crash. Oh, how convenient.
Yep, stay out of small aircraft. You're absolutely right. Well, now you...
Honestly, Bob, I'd stay out of all aircraft because I don't put it past them not crashing planes into buildings, remember?
Oh, true enough.
200 passengers and an important politician who's a socialist. The CIA or the NSA will do that, no problem. Of course they will.
If the end justifies the means,
if it doesn't, Bob, even if it doesn't.
Well, no, but see, in anything like that, I mean, Operation Northwoods back in the Kennedy administration, they will always deem that the end justifies the means.
And ultimately, if it doesn't work out the way they say it does, then I'll just say it worked out the way they say it did.
Yeah, right. Now, when I first saw that you were on the line, Andy, I guessed that we were going to be talking about another story coming out of the UK today.
The Diana one.
No. No, I couldn't care less about Diana. No offense, but I really couldn't. No, this is a headline out of The Independent. Diplomats' suppressed document lays bare the lies behind Iraq war.
Oh, that one. Well, that was a story about a week ago for us, actually.
So the Independent's just picking it up today?
No, well, what happened was the Independent's got the actual story, but we knew that the story was being suppressed a week ago. Do you know what I mean? Basically, this guy was giving evidence to a Commons committee, and he said basically, I'd like to tell you what I know about this, but I've been restricted by the Official Secrets Act, and MI5, who he used to work for, basically put the leash on him, and so they had to get a High Court injunction to release the data to the public.
Well, apparently if I read this correctly, Andy,
it's pretty damning.
This makes the Downing Street memo look pretty tame.
Yeah. Basically, I mean, it's the Downing Street memo was kind of like what they assumed. This is like absolute fact. You know, the Downing Street memo was, we went there, we realized they already had it sorted and they knew what they were doing. This is like,
well, see, and see the,
what we were told to do.
The fallback position of the Bush administration here, Andy, is, well, you know, okay, it turns out he didn't have any weapons of mass destruction, and he didn't have any gas, and he wasn't able to nuke anybody. But see, we had faulty intelligence because we acted on faulty intelligence, and we gave faulty intelligence to the Senate. You know, but that's what they're hiding behind.
Yeah,
okay?
It blows that out of the water.
This takes that all away because this leaves no question whatsoever. I mean, no reasonable person.
I know,
in the same or similar circumstances, could take issue with the findings of this. What's the guy's name? Carney Ross?
I think it's Carney Ross. I think it's a weird one. I think it's being pronounced about four different ways.
Yeah, C A R N E. But he makes it clear that this is no longer Tony Blair might have or Tony Blair should have or Tony Blair may have could have. No. Tony, it is finally, you know, on the 15th of December 2006, it is finally, Andy, absolutely clear that Tony Blair knew, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that none of the crap that was being talked about Saddam Hussein had any basis in fact or truth.
But, yeah, I mean, it's probably slightly more relevant in America, because, I mean, we already knew that in Europe. I mean, as soon as the evidence was presented to the UN, literally like 5 minutes after the Colin Powell's "these are weapons of mass destruction" sites, look at these satellite images that we haven't at all tampered with. literally minutes after that, the BBC had someone from French intelligence going, rubbish, this is all rubbish, it's lies, they're making it up. I can show you satellite images that we have of the same areas at the same times that don't show those things. So, you know, we knew already, and this is all lies. But just think, Bob, you're going to talk about it, and maybe some people in the serious left and Air America will talk about it, and, you know, there's a couple of other liberal sort of talk shows that on the web that might talk about it, but your mainstream media won't. Because the people who run the propaganda campaign against you, and remember, propaganda is not a dirty word. It was a perfectly acceptable word until the Nazis had it referred to them. But the people who run the propaganda in the newsrooms are going to squash it because they don't want to know. It doesn't help them. They want the war. Good or bad, they want the war. Because, you know, GE wants the war, and GE controls NBC, and Disney is backing the government of America on pretty much every decision it's ever made. So, well, they'll push the war in their new studios. You know?
Well, part and parcel of what Mr. Ross said is a revelation that British officials also, and this is straight from the Independent article, mm-hmm. British officials warned U.S. diplomats that bringing down the Iraqi dictator would lead to the chaos that the world has since witnessed. Quote,
yeah.
Quote from Mr. Ross, I remember on several occasions the U.K. team stating this view in terms during our discussions with the U.S. who agreed. At the same time, we would frequently argue when the U.S. raised the subject that regime change was inadvisable, primarily on the grounds that Iraq would collapse into chaos. So what this is, I mean, I would assume that this is pretty, I mean, yeah, you guys knew it. We knew it. You know, intelligent people, Andy, knew it. Okay. But this is going to come as a bit of a shock to the sheeple who took that, you know, our leaders would never lie to us tack.
Well, yeah. I mean, what I suggest you do, is get, I don't know, everyone on the Head On Network who's got access to both internet, and, like, you know, obviously knows their congressperson or whatever, they should send a link or a copy of the text, copy it from the webpage of the Independent and paste it, and put, this is a quote from the UK Independent, and post it to your congressmen and senators, because they won't know this has happened. They're not going to be informed of this.
Well,
okay? Congressman Byrd probably, or Senator Byrd, whatever the hell he is, he doesn't know this has happened. He doesn't know this story's come out.
I'm guessing you're probably right.
And so you guys need to start.
Well, this is part of, now see, this is where I can get a little bit paranoid, Andy. You know, it's the middle of the Christmas season, and we have the collective attention span in the United States, and maybe to a certain extent in the UK, of Pete Moss. Okay.
Well, that's part of the socialized norm that they've wanted.
You know, if this had come out in October, or if this came out in January, it would be a different story.
Well, you just got to keep going. Just mail it every other day until January and keep sending it to your congressperson until you finally get an email saying, stop, all right, we understand, we've read it. God's sake, stop sending us the email. You know, there's not much else we can do, Bob, short of a revolution, and neither of our countries are in a revolutionary situation. Let's be totally clear about that. We're in a pre-revolutionary situation. It could go either way. It depends what the ruling class do, because, as always, the ball is in their court when it comes to violence, because they control the army or the military, which is the legitimized forces of the state. So we don't want to push them. They'll eventually push us, or they'll collapse and we'll be able to take over peacefully. But, you know, until they push us into a revolution, all we can do is continue to bug them and irritate them and send them letters and emails and phone them up. And, you know, I get off my chest by screaming at the assistants of my local MPs and stuff. I say, hi, it's me again. They go, okay, I'll hold the phone away from my ear for a bit. You know, and I have quite a good relationship with the secretary of my local MP's office. She puts up with me screaming and then passes on my complaint in civilized terms. You know, but we need to do this, and there's nothing we can do except for that, you know? I mean, well, sure, we could try and get into politics ourselves, but it's difficult enough for me over here, and you guys don't have millions.
So. Yeah, it's that tough thing of, the we've got an old adage about the best way to make $1 million. Start out with $999,999.99.
Yeah.
And you know, it's one of the reasons we militate for clean elections and election reform, is that we have an understanding that there are people out there who could be very good in government.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, let's look at a fanciful form of government for a minute. Let's assume that there's been some kind of crazy revolution. The financial markets have finally blown themselves to pieces, and we get a chance to take over. What sort of government would we want? Do we really want to elect people that have the ability to get themselves elected? Seems like a bad idea to me. I think we should appoint people. I mean, there's how many professors in the United States?
thousands, hundreds
yeah.
of thousands.
Any of them would be good. A computer can select them. You know, a panel of juries picked from a jury panel picked from the local community can oversee them. You will do your service.
Well, see, that's one of the objectionable things about us trying to set up the government in Iraq. We made all this ballyhoo about they're going to have their own form of government and they're going to select it and yada yada
well,
yada yada. But we gave them the template, Andy.
It's not even a new story. Look back at the Cuba one. Look, Cuba, you can have your own flag. It's got one star on it. You can pick whoever you like as president as long as we don't object to them. It's the same story, Bob. America is an imperial power, okay? They don't like to talk about the American empire. They like to talk about being the world policeman. It's somehow been thrust into their laps. It was intentional. The whole thing was intentional. All the wars you've ever had have been planned and have been intentional. And that includes the Second World War, where you got involved fighting Japan and fighting Germany. All of it has been intentional. None of it is, you know, some of the situations have arisen without the control of the U.S., but everything they've chosen to do has been an intentional choice based on the situation. And it's always been the intent to grab more power and more territory and more resource. You look back at your history, and that's what it is. Look at after the Second World War. What happened to the British Empire?
You shrank.
It was taken apart. Who got control of all of those territories?
Mostly us.
There you go. Do you know what happened to the ones that were worthless? They got their independence.
Sure.
The ones that weren't worthless and could be controlled by the U.S. I mean, the only reason you don't control India is because you couldn't have controlled it any better than we could.
Well, no one can except the Indians.
Not with 600 million Indians at the time and the best part of a billion now. No, only they can. But that's the point. You know,
and only they have a right to.
Hmm?
And only they have a right to.
They have the right to control themselves, but that's the point. America took over everything it could. And I don't say the British Empire was right. It was wrong. I don't necessarily believe that the positive things it did outweigh the negative things it did. It did a lot of bad stuff, the British Empire, just like every empire does. But
well, we can, you know, Africa, at this point in time, you know, December 2006, Africa stands in stark relief as the poster child for everything that was ever wrong with European colonialism.
And I'd say that Africa would have recovered by now if it wasn't for American colonialism. Angola, that was a U.S. war. The current war in Democratic Republic of Congo, that's a U.S. war.
You know, the Sudan...
Left hell alone by everyone.
Yeah, the Sudan is an act of...
Somalia?
American negligence, at the very least. You know,
American interference. It's not negligence. The whole thing is intentional. Bob, this is the thing. When the day I had this realization, I thought, oh, God, I've aged 1,000 years. Because when you actually wake up, or when, you know, that snap, when you've finally taken on so much that it snaps and you realize that you've been lied to about pretty much everything since the day you were born, and your entire education system has been created to keep you in check. I mean, that's why I didn't do very well in education. I'm exceptionally intelligent. That's the reason I didn't do very well in education, because I saw right through it straight away.
Because it runs contrary to the mean, sure.
And that's the thing, you know, I mean, people like me, people like you, they force us out of society. Because we think, and we don't like what we see, and we try to change it. And that we're the danger, and that's why people like us, you know, people who are left-wing priests in South America get executed by right-wing killers.
Yeah, and labor organizers get wiped out by Coca-Cola death squads in Colombia.
Teachers in Guatemala and nurses and priests in Ecuador. Throw a dart at a damn map, okay?
And see if it doesn't hit somewhere that the United States is attempting
or has attempted
to screw up. Yeah, look, they just put Pinochet in the dirt, and I'm surprised they didn't have to screw him in. He was so damn crooked. But you
he
know,
lived in this country for years. I'm so ashamed of that.
Well, you know, don't be. I mean, the economic miracle that transpired under his reign in Chile was manifested by another man that just went to the dirt, Milton Friedman.
Yeah.
You know. This is one of the things that makes it tough to be agnostic or atheist or anything like that, because
you want them to burn.
I want there to be an eternal place where Augusto Pinochet and Milton Friedman sit there and turn on the spits over eternal flames and get to look at each other. Well, how's it working out for you?
I've got an image that from a science fiction author you might like of the universe and heaven and hell, and there's multiple layers of our universe. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
When a soul is separated from its physical body, it can either go towards the light or towards the darkness. And the darkness is our interpretation of hell, and imagine a place where your mind raped for eternity by all the demons of all the universe's existences. That's where I want them to go.
Well, yeah, I mean, right, with Pinochet in mind. I don't know that maybe there's not some reality or truth to it, because every human culture comes up with an archetype along these lines. You know, you've got Sisyphus and the rock.
Yeah.
Prometheus, Sisyphus pushed the rock, Prometheus was bound on it, right?
Yeah, he was the one that had the liver cut out or whatever.
Right, they became a fairly rational people, the ancient Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
But every culture has this idea of something that happens to you after you die if you have screwed up this one.
Yeah, I mean, is it wishful thinking? Is it a racial memory of something else? Who knows? But you know, for certain.
I've got a list. I mean,
yeah.
There's a lunch counter in hell where every seat is filled by a lynched African American, and Lester Maddox and George Wallace. Mm-hmm. Are scurrying around behind the counter going, "Coming in a minute, boss!"
Yeah.
You know. I would so like to believe that that's real, because
yeah.
I have no patience, Andy, with the evil that is done by people who then turn around and go to Sunday services. I had a story a couple of days ago about George W. Bush's aunt delivering glowing words for a former choir director of her church who has been caught traveling abroad to photograph children having sex with each other. And, you know, she delivered these, she said he was just a wonderful man.
Well,
you know, and that's the way they are. They can sit down and at the stroke of a pen wipe out 100,000 ordinary lives.
Yeah.
And then turn around, have lunch, and go to church and thank Jesus.
Because you've got to remember, to people like that, to the evangelical, arguably a lot of these people are either evangelicals or their thought process work in exactly the same way while not accepting the God bit. To that sort of mindset, people aren't real. No one's real. Not even, in a sense, themselves or their families are real. They can't perceive anything as having emotion because their own mind is so screwed. They're a classical psychopath. That's what they are. They're not the one that runs screaming through the world with a knife, plunging into whoever's about. They're the one that, at the flick of a pen, will consign a million people to their death. And people like Bill Clinton did that. And Madeleine Albright did that. Now, you look at Madeleine Albright and you think kind of, oh, someone's grandmother in a twin set and pearls. But she's a killer. She's a mad dog killer, just like Andrew Jackson, that wonderful Indian slaughterer, was. Because
yeah.
Remember what she said? After about, what, a picosecond of thought?
Yeah, all in all, I think it was, of course, you know, later on she's, oh, no, I didn't say that, I didn't mean that, blah, blah, blah.
But we have her on tape.
Yeah.
So, bullshit.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
But we have her on tape. And just like Billy Boy Clinton was a mad killer, I'm absolutely senile with our dementia, but I'll just sign anything that's put in front of me. Ray Gunn, he was a mad dog killer. Carter was a killer. Nixon was a killer. All of my prime ministers going back for a very long time were killers. They're all nuts. It explains so much when you realize that the people who are our ruling class are actually insane.
Yeah, in other words, wanting to rule someone else besides, yeah, wanting to rule someone else's person besides one's own is evidence of insanity.
Yeah.
And in a way, I think that's true, because, you know, if you're teaching little children and they say, well, you know, somebody said so-and-so about me, you know, and I heard that, you know, one of the first things you teach a child is, look, your life is going to be full and busy. You're going to be far too busy worrying about your own life to worry about someone else's.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking your statement, and you can extrapolate it back into tribal cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever one guy rises up and says, "I'm the one for you,"
mm-hmm.
then odds are that person probably has some level of personality. Pathology to make him want to take care of someone else's life instead of first attending to his own.
Yeah.
Everybody loves what Jesus said, and you know, this is a nation that is absolutely poisoned with Jesus.
Yeah, and none of it would be recognizable to Jesus or anything.
Jesus was an anarchist.
Well, Jesus was at least a very, very, very left-wing liberal, if not a total socialist anarchist.
I mean, well, even in something like "Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar, and unto God that which is God's," that's saying, you know, do what you got to do, but you know, get along.
Yeah, that's a statement.
Mind your own business.
That's not a statement of give taxes to the rich because you just they deserve them somehow. It's give taxes to the rich because he'll come and kill you
if you don't.
Yeah, that's it. You know, the teachings of Jesus are very easy to understand, and you know, it just shames me that we live in a world where apparently intelligent beings will, you know, wander around parroting things they say Jesus said that he either didn't say or are so viciously twisted that they're unrecognizable. You know, I mean, anybody who's for Jesus has to be against the death penalty. Anybody who's for Jesus has to be against damage to the environment in any form. And that means, you know, if you're really, really for Jesus, then you'll buy a recycled or a second-hand computer and not a new one because of the damage they do. And you'll buy a second-hand car because it's already done as many miles as it can and you're now no longer doing so much damage to the environment. You'll do all those things that you know, just to make sure you can continue to live your life, fine, that's what Jesus said, but you do it in the most charitable and selfless way possible. I don't see any of that in SUVs and plasma screen TVs and enormous houses heated and cooled on the patios. I mean, air-conditioned patios.
I know.
Bob, air-conditioned patios in California.
I know.
I mean, I don't know much about California, but it's damn hot.
Right.
It's like people over here have patio heaters. I've got a patio heater. It's called a jumper. Or a sweater over there. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry. Lost me in the language for a minute.
Yeah. Well, you know, it could be called a pullover or a cardigan. That'd be a bit worse. But yeah, you know.
Cardigan, I get.
Insane. And these people then turn around, and they have their little cross or fish symbol on their car, and they say, I'm for Jesus. Well, no, you're not. You're a liar. You know? Anyone that's for the death penalty can't be for Jesus.
Right.
Well, they've missed the point.
I don't. And boy, I tell you what. Wait, and try to confront one of these people with any of that.
Time.
And
get the proselytizers coming around all the time. I normally have a 10-minute shouting match with them at the doorstep and send them away confused about the basic tenets of their faith.
Good.
Well, it's called what needs to be done. I mean, if I didn't do it, nobody else would.
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is, you and I probably share, and many of the people listening. Share somewhat of a common heritage. You know, my people are Scots. They're Welsh and English. I mean, and frankly, we had our cultural heritage. We had our religion ripped away from us.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, granted, it wasn't the Roman Church that did it. It was just a Roman.
Yeah.
First Julius Caesar, and later on the legions that were sent by Claudius.
Mm.
They hunted down every druid, slaughtered them to the last human being, and it was all downhill from there.
Yep.
There was a burial unearthed somewhere in London a couple of weeks ago. The news story came out, and you know it's an Englishman of some 1500 years extraction, but odds are, you know, guy probably had a Roman name by then.
Yeah.
You know, culture is very difficult to hang on to.
Well, it is. That's what makes me so crazy about the people that write into newspapers saying how, oh, the language isn't allowed to change. Kids shouldn't be allowed to use words like in it and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, language changes, culture changes. You can't hold on to it. It's very fluid. It only appears to be static because we live such short lives.
Well, let's just think here. One of my daughters has a name out of Nordic mythology.
Right.
Another of my daughter's names comes from the Roman word for pearl.
Right.
A third daughter's name is all three of her names come from the Bible.
Right.
And my name actually comes from either Celtic or Anglo-Saxon or, you know, but by and large, you know, look at the naming through Western Europe and the United States. Most of them either come from the Bible,
yeah,
or somehow Latinate. You know,
well, yeah,
talk about the erasure of a culture, Andy.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, there's a few Greek names were Latinized and then yeah passed down basically. I mean. What did the Romans do for us? I'd argue very little. I'd argue the Romans did very little for any culture they encountered, except for possibly destroy them and steal all of their stuff. I mean, you know, people talk about the Romans being fantastic engineers and so forth. Well, they stole all of that from the Greeks.
And they were even better butchers.
Hmm?
They were even better butchers.
Well, yeah, I mean, they talk about the amazingness of the Roman legions, but the legions actually, while probably on a par or slightly better than most other forces. They weren't the thing that broke the enemy. What broke the enemy was the fact that Rome could deploy so many of them in so many different places at once that small groups of tribesmen couldn't band together and take them all on. So while the group of tribesmen were all gathered together and slaughtering one legion, the other legions burnt their houses down.
Well, there's some truth in that. You know, we're getting probably a little too inside baseball for folks, but okay, inside cricket for you. But the epic battle at Alesia, wherein all of the Gauls got together under the leadership of Vercingetorix, and had Caesar outnumbered 10-1.
Yeah,
he still won. I mean,
I've got to admit, Caesar was an exception amongst Romans because he was actually quite good as a general. There were very few Roman generals that were anything more than competent.
Scipio Africanus and Caesar, and after that, it's a pretty short list.
Yeah, Pompey was a competent enough general, but Caesar obviously outsmarted him. And there were a couple of others, but yeah, most of them were terrible. I mean, you know, the number of lost legions is quite phenomenal when you actually look at the... They don't like to talk about it, the gentleman historian. But I mean, this is part of our problem. Look at the way Roman history has been looked at. Who was it written by? Fat white guys with time on their hands.
Well, isn't that the authorship of most history?
Well, that's the point. Most history is gentleman history. So we have this view of the Romans. Julius Caesar was a bad guy. He broke the Republic and created an empire. No, rubbish. The Republic had been broken long before. Julius Caesar was a populist, and he decided the best way to take control was to appeal to the people, and the best way to maintain control was to keep people, as in the poor, happy. That's not a bad way to run. That's a benevolent.
Well, yeah, and the history's full of that. The brothers Gracchi, I think they were Cornelians.
Their entire clan was slaughtered for it. Julius Caesar was only doing what they did. I mean, it goes throughout cultures, throughout history. Let's be honest. I would rather have lived under Caesar's Rome than any other Roman emperor or even the Republic before there, because during Caesar's time, you had a chance of getting a farm.
Yeah. And you could go off somewhere, live peaceably, mind your own business, that's one of the things that ordinary working people have against them. It is really, really hard, and we're encouraged not to, Andy. It is really, really hard to mind your own business anymore.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you're constantly told what is your business and what everybody else's business should be. I mean, we live in a society that's organized around the principle of just continually scaring people. You know what I mean? You've got to always be either not rich enough or not have the new enough stuff or frightened of terrorists or whatever. Do you know what I mean? You've always got to be frightened of being behind or being left out or being blown up.
Yeah, whether it's the new TV, the new car, or, you know, they moved in down the block, now we have to sell. You know, I lived through that in Alabama, Andy.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous, but basically, the problem with human beings is we're kind of easy to exploit in certain ways. While we're consciously going, oh, that's rubbish, we won't fall for that one, we'll just totally suck up a complete lie the next minute from someone else. They've just got to pitch it right. And that's why you and I and people who use the web and people like Michael Parenti and Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn and all the others, you know, those people are the really important ones because they write history and modern history from the point of view of the people. And that's what we need to understand. Of course, that's why the school system doesn't have their books in the school system.
Because they're dangerous.
They're dangerous because ideas are dangerous.
You know, I was in my mid 30s before I ever read Howard Zinn.
Yeah.
And God, it was like having my eyelids peeled back.
Well, that's what I mean. You know, I've spent the last since I was about 16, so the last 10 years of my life, so nearly half of my life, absorbing what people would call communist propaganda, but what I call actual like logical thought. And the great thing about the people I listen to and respect is that they say, "Don't trust me. Check it out. Go and find out for yourself." And I listen to their stuff, and I generally go onto Google or something like that, and I just type in, you know, a phrase or whatever, or a sentence or just a word, and find out what I get. And you know what? They're right. Every damn time, they're right. No lies, no exaggerations, they're right. But you read something by Christopher Hitchens, he's a wonderful right-wing fascist, isn't he?
Oh,
it's all lies.
Christopher Hitchens, Andrew Sullivan, William Crystal.
I read the Sunday Times, which is Murdoch's paper, because you have to know what they're up to, yeah? And Andrew Sullivan, oh my God, watching that guy flop from subject to subject. He was never for Bush.
No, you know? Oh, no, 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 not anymore, he wasn't.
And neither was Hitchens. No, 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 Bush maniac. Never thought he was a good.
Well, you know, we talked a few nights ago about this article in Vanity Fair. I don't know. I imagine it'll show up in the UK version as well. The author, the author's British man by the name of David Rose, who has been on this program, interviewed Pearl and Edelman, and you know all of these bloodthirsty murderers, and to the last man, they are all now. Well, you know, we had a very lovely idea.
Yeah.
And Bush screwed it up. There was nothing wrong with the idea. They just, it was in the execution. You know, I think one of them actually uses the word execution, and I couldn't help wondering, did he just realize what he said?
Yeah, yeah.
But at VanityFair.com, it's called Neo Culpa. I think you might find it a very interesting read.
When I get some access again.
Oh, God, poor Andy.
But anyway, I better let you guys go.
Listen, I'm sorry to have kept you on so long, but we haven't talked in a while, and God, I love our conversation.
Yeah, I needed it, to be honest with you. I had to get all that off my chest. My blood pressure's already dropping. I can feel it.
Well, good for you. One last thing before you go. From my perspective, these right-wing freaks have ruined Christmas over here.
Yeah.
And of course, it's commercialized there, too, but there are traditions that are organic. In the British Isles, that predate the arrival of the baby Jesus.
Yeah.
Is there any of that traditional Christmas left there?
Well, it's difficult to say. I mean, I've got lots of friends whose parents were kind of reconstructed hippies and have become kind of pagan, and they've kind of been brought up in a, you know, wishy-washy kind of paganish way. But let's be honest, we don't really know what they would have done for their festivals. But yeah, there's winter solstice feasts, and people have the, you know, the understanding the real meaning of mistletoe, which is it looks pretty in wintertime and it's something you can decorate your house with. You know what I mean? That's what it was about. It's one of the few winter flowering plants. Yeah, you know, I've got a mate who's invited us on the 21st for a kind of Christmas feast where everyone gets together and helps cook and sort of, you know, a communal thing sort of thing. Just trying to be slightly tribal, I guess, is what they try and do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite nice. Yeah, it's nice. You get around. There's none of the Christian overtones or trees with crosses on or any of that nonsense, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it can be quite nice to do that. But we don't have any of the kind of arguments about it that you guys have with the war on Christmas nonsense and all that.
Well, you're lucky in that regard because, you know, I was raised in a family where we had some nice Christmas traditions, and it was a very special time of year, and Christmas was always just an absolute joy for me as a child. But as I've become an adult, it's not a function of my growing older or my maturation process. It is the fact that Christmas has been utterly destroyed here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a smoking ruin on the ground, Andy.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, arguably the idea of giving presents in wintertime probably preceded Christ, and the idea of giving presents because of Christ's birth, yeah, fair enough, and it seems to work, but obviously the corporations have just taken it and destroyed it. I mean, I don't know about you, but adverts for Christmas gifts start on November the 1st here on TV.
Oh, lucky you!
But yeah, the shops have their signs up in the middle of August.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the big retail chains, the Halloween stuff goes down, and bang.
Yeah.
Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, here, very often they put the Halloween stuff up next to the very earliest Christmas stands and stuff. And, yeah, I mean, it's all just marketing and rubbish. And the problem is that the less well-educated members of society, i.e. the ones who can't afford to mess around at Christmas, are the ones who end up having to buy everything because the advertising is aimed at their kids. You know, I mean, I've seen the adverts they have on TV, and it's, first of all, the stuff they're selling is crap. I had better toys than that when I was a child. Anybody remember Transformers?
Oh, yeah.
They were great. Really good value for money. I mean, they lasted years. You could throw them out of windows, hit your sister with them, anything you like. Yeah. Nowadays, I don't know, you get like these plastic toy guns that light up and break if you drop them, and you get these Barbie dolls.
Oh, see, but I'm even older than you, Andy. I had a collection passed on to me from an older cousin.
Oh, well, I did that too.
Of,
I had Lego.
No, I had Matchbox cars.
Oh, classic.
And I've still got them. They're a little banged up and the paint's chipping. But that'll speak to you because those were classic English steel manufactured toy cars.
Yeah, I used to get loads of them because they were still quite popular even when I was a child. Those sort of toy cars, yeah.
And you know, I think my love for automobiles probably stemmed from that, because
they were well made.
Yeah, well, but one of my favorite, and it was a huge collection, Andy. One of my favorites was one of those really, really long needle nose Jaguars.
Oh right, yeah.
And it was painted the British Racing green.
Oh right, yeah.
And that thing leaped out of that whole collection at me. Oh, this is it.
Well, keep a hold of them, man. In a few 10-15 years' time, they'll be worth something. Not huge amounts compared to, like, brand new and in good condition, but you can get serious amounts of money for those sort of cars now.
Well, you know, I think I'll hold on to them just for the sake of passing them on to my kids, because maybe their kids someday will want to play with something that doesn't fall apart electronic. Upon touching.
Yeah.
Andy, the happiest of holidays to you.
Well, you too, man.
And to Hazel.
I will pass on the love and messages and stuff. And, yeah, have a great time. And to everybody out there, just remember, it is a class war, and you're either on the side of the ruling class, or you're on our side, and that's it.
Exactly.
It's the only time you're either with us or against us that it actually applies.
Well, you know, there's an old Union Miners song that gained popularity in the early decades of the 20th century, and it's a very simple chorus. Whose side are you on, boy? Whose side are you on?
Yeah. And I'd just like to finish it off with one more thing. This is a very key point. Just say no to the war on drugs.
I couldn't agree more. Take care, Andy.
Take care, Matt. I'll see you soon.
Bye now. Hadn't heard from Andy in a while. Great conversation. Tell you what, I'm a little dry. So we'll take a break, do a little news late, and come back. Your calls are welcome, 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. In San Jose, a federal judge has just declared unconstitutional lethal injection as a method of execution in California. The judge has already placed a moratorium on capital punishment in the state. In Florida, Governor Jeb Bush halted all capital punishment today following a bungled execution there last week. The medical examiner in charge says the needles were inserted incorrectly into the prisoner. His death took twice as long as usual and required two doses of lethal chemicals. In Iraq, more than three American servicemen were killed today, two Marines and one soldier. That brings the death toll for U.S. troops this month so far to at least 54. In Basra, gunmen killed a powerful Shia tribal sheikh who's been aligned with British forces. Five other Iraqis were killed in scattered violence. In Gaza, tens of thousands of Hamas backers rallied today in support of the prime minister. Yesterday, a gun battle on the border wounded his son. In recent days, there has been increasing violence between the Fatah and Hamas parties. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is asking Congress for tens of millions of dollars to increase the security forces of Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. The U.S. hopes to reduce the violence and tensions currently plaguing Palestine. In Beijing, U.S. trade representatives opened negotiations on key issues, including stabilization of Chinese currency rates and a crackdown on widespread copyright abuses. The U.S. wants to reduce its massive trade deficit with China, a record $240 billion this year. In Washington, optimistic news on the condition of South Dakota Senator Tim Johnson. He's recovering without complications from emergency surgery Wednesday night after suffering a brain hemorrhage. He remains in critical condition. In the Pacific Northwest, one of the worst storms in recent memory is battering the region. More than a million customers have lost power. Streets are flooded. Winds exceeding 100 miles an hour are felling trees. At least four people have died. Blizzard conditions are continuing to hamper rescue efforts on Oregon's Mount Hood for three hikers missing since Sunday. In Indianapolis, more than 300 people became ill after eating at an Olive Garden restaurant last weekend. Health officials are investigating. 26 Bosnian Serbs were arrested in a series of raids across the U.S. designed to scoop up ex-soldiers from Republika Srpska who committed war crimes during the Bosnian War. Three Serb refugees remain at large. And you're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Hugh Heiser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're there to talk with people about their business banking. Here's a guy who not only banks at the bank, he helped build the bank building.
Yes, sir.
Do you find the fact that it's a local bank appealing?
Yes, that's just it. It was the local people in the community that originally started the bank, and that's why I got involved.
It's a local bank with big bank benefits. It's part of a network of banks. Does that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Both.
Absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
At A&M University in Texas, researchers announced the world's first cloned cat has given birth to three kittens who are doing well. Copycat was cloned in 2001. The nation's newest panda cub now has a name. The Atlanta Zoo says the 100-day-old female cub has been named Milan, which means Atlanta Beauty. She'll be introduced to the public as soon as she can walk on her own. She's the fifth giant panda born in a U.S. zoo in the past 6 years. The F-35 Lightning II Joint Strike Fighter successfully passed its first test today. Development of the multi-role jet fighter is the Pentagon's most expensive project ever, $276.5 billion. Nintendo is recalling 3.2 million wrist straps on its Wii computer game system. Customers have filed numerous complaints that wand-like hand controllers were flying out of the hands of energetic players. Consumer inflation was unchanged in November, largely due to big declines in energy costs. Japan Tobacco will acquire Britain's Gallagher Group for $19 billion. It's the largest corporate acquisition ever by a Japanese company. Light sweet crude is trading at $63.43 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones up 29 at 12,445. NASDAQ up 3 at 2457. S&P 500 up 14 at 1427. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lunt.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All right. You know what's kind of cool about doing radio the way we do it? You can chuck the format out the window. I didn't have to break away from a wonderful conversation with Andy because I didn't have to bow and kowtow and scrape to anybody's, you know, some little AM station in, you know, busted in busted knuckle Colorado's automation. Again, I say it. This is the future. Right here. What's going on? The Head-On Radio Network. We have a chance to reinvent the very essence of what radio means. I'm going to the phones here in just a moment. But I want to share something with you. We don't often get weirdo right-wing email because most of them are more or less terrified. And this is another case of it, you'll see. But this is from, I'll tell you. I listened to your radio broadcast for the first time today and, all caps, thank God I will never have to listen to it again. I sent somebody out, and they put a gun to her head and made her listen. I mean, that's how I am.
It was a show from several years ago that was listed as a link in an article I was researching. Now, that fires up my curiosity because I didn't know I'd been linked in any articles. In this show, you were dissing someone who wrote you who had a differing opinion than your liberals are going to save the world crap and Republicans are nothing but a bunch of dung-dwelling, murderous, narrow-minded bigots. I don't think I've ever called Republicans dung-dwelling, but boy, I got a new one now. It is interesting how it is the Republican Party that is fighting to protect unborn babies. It is interesting how it is the Republican Party that is fighting to protect the invalid, the handicapped, the delayed. Yeah, they're fighting to protect a delay, all right. On this show, you ridiculed the Supreme Court justices, you mocked people, and you made fun of a man who wrote to you. You were a sad commentary on your pathetic party's attempt at bringing people together. I looked at your website for radio stations that might carry your garbage, maybe that would explain the reason I've never heard of you before again, thank God. And imagine my surprise, not that none were listed. Do not write back, as it will be deleted promptly, just as the sewage you spew is flushed immediately. And I am not afraid to sign my name, especially since it's someone else's. Roxanne Rawls, R-O-X-A-N-N-E, Rawls, R-A-W-L-S, Salem, Oregon. Registered Democrat, I will be changing parties, as I don't want to be associated with anything that has to do with your evil rantings. No, wait a minute. Your evil rantings. Your defamation of people. Your representation of the moral decay and pus infecting the Democratic, term used loosely in regards to you, party. Well, she says I can't write back to her. You know, I've had all over the years, I've had nasty emails from right-wing freeper freaks, and I've never been anything but polite to them. But this is what you get. This fake Roxanne person is no more a Democrat than Tom DeLay is. But the sad thing is, she tells me I can't dialogue with her. And, you know, that's the damn crime of it all. I'd like to know which show she listened to. I'd like to know which Supreme Court case I was talking about when I referenced a piece of human waste like Antonin Scalia. If it was a couple of years ago, I must have been referring to Rehnquist, Scalia, and Slappy Thomas. Yeah, the guy that wanted one of his employees to watch porno movies with him. Classy guy. Roxanne Rawls of Salem, Oregon. I can't write to her. And more's the pity. I'd like to engage this person. Because I'd like to find out, of course, I doubt if this is a real person. But Roxanne Rawls's email address is Roxanne Rawls, R-O-X-A-N-N-E-R-A-W-L-S, 24@yahoo.com. It's always the Yahoo address or the MSN address or... No. And by the way, there is no Roxanne Rawls listed in the white pages for Salem, Oregon. I have a pretty good idea where this freeper is coming from. Did you get that? I love that line. It's interesting how it is the Republican Party that is fighting to protect the invalid, the handicapped, and the delayed. The Republican Party that is fighting to protect unborn babies. You know, see, that's the problem. The Republican Party fights to save the unborn babies. But you know, they're not pro-life, they're pro-fetus. They don't give a damn about what happens to the baby after it's born. And they're, you know, they're saving the invalids. Really? Last I read, we were about to experience some pretty profound Bush administration Medicare and Medicaid cuts in this state that were, and other states around the Union that were going to negatively impact the lives of some of those invalids that Sweet Roxanne refers to. Yeah, dear.
Dear, that's, you know, that's not a liberal. That's not a registered Democrat. That's a little freeper out there making up an email address. You know, could not
and
tell
probably
you,
and probably stealing rocks the real Roxanne Rawls's identity.
Very, that's a great possibility. But the thing of it is that when you see that, you know, that's nothing but bull.
Precisely. Get out of there. Sometimes we have to maintain order around here, and we have to say things like "Get out of that room." To the Munchkins, because we've got family values here, because we've got a family.
But
wait, Agnes, darling, knock the moral decay off of me, please. I've got a lot of moral decay going. Oh, don't touch the pus. Ooh.
But if this person is listening, I mean, could they give a link to what story they were reading or where they got this archive of a couple of years ago or anything?
Well, we know where they got the archive. It must have sent them, obviously, to White Rose Society. Boy, is she has Roxanne really got a big wake up coming if she steps out of my archive and checks out a few of the others. Woo! But do you see this? What a bunch of cowards! What a bunch of losers. Can't even, you know, this person can't even come up straightforward and say, you know, I'm a Republican and I disagree with you. They have to pretend to be something that they're not. Roxanne Rawls, 24, at yahoo.com. Let's go to the phones. Luke joins us from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, fine. Yeah, you know how it is. It's one of those things where, oh, yeah, I've been a Democrat all my life, and I wouldn't vote for you all ever again. Yeah.
Well, this person's giving up on an entire political party because of me. I may have to go shoot myself, Luke.
I was going to say, what did you say, Bob? Oh, my gosh.
You know, I don't know. I thinking back, I remember back in the bad old days of terrestrial radio, I used to get emails from people who wouldn't sign their names. And I frequently referred to them as gutless cowards, which they are.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've got the nerve to say it, it doesn't count for much unless you've got the nerve to put your name behind it, right?
I tell you what, it's one of those things. The one that got to me this week about that was this whole thing with Mr. DeLay reappeared.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got his website up. Unfortunately, Mr. DeLay apparently doesn't do anything on it. You know, apparently everybody, he has people, you know, that do it and put his name on it. You know, so I consider that kind of like an AstroTurf website.
Well, everything they do is AstroTurf. There's enough, because nothing will grow in the poison polluted soil of the Republican Party.
I was sitting there watching him talk the other night on one of the shows, and I was sitting there looking at him, and I just thought, you know what? Reach up there, take that hairpiece off, pick up the cat, and you're Dr. Evil. You know?
$1 million.
The thing I want to talk to you about tonight is what we're going to start seeing for the next couple of weeks is we're going to start seeing this reframing, as they call it, of the story. That the argument is you've already heard some of these. Our local right wing radio show host already did a couple of these. You know, the main reason that it didn't, nothing's gone across is because, well, Bush is just not a good speaker. You know, he's not really good with the English language. You know, makes mistakes. Or let's see, what was the other one? I said, the good news, of course, is not being told by the media, you know, and the Dems and the media have been out for him ever since he got elected.
Oh,
their term.
Yeah, they must have missed Judy Miller.
Oh yeah, so what is it? They're covering up Bush's message, and I'm sitting there going, let's see now. This is the same George Bush who, for the full month before the election, every time we turned around, the media was carrying him doing his stump speech. You know, that if you turned on one of the cable channels, at least you got not just the F word network, that you got to see. You know, you got to see him doing his stump speech, and it's like, you know, the media called him a couple times though on the fact, you know, that he kept on saying, "I'm going to have a policy statement," and it would just be his regular stump speech. You know, out there just trying to drum up the numbers.
Yeah, same crap, different day.
Yeah. We'll do 1, 3, and 4 instead of 1, 2, and 3 this time. You know what I mean? Just to vary it up a little bit. But well, it's like this thing with Rummy Field.
Yeah.
you saw the thing now where, oh, you know, Rumsfeld wanted to go in with more people. Hell, Rumsfeld wanted to go in with less people if he'd had his option. He wanted to.
Well, yeah, because he's the father of the lean, mean military invading machine, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, the thing of it is, it's sort of like, okay, guys, that's fine for taking out Saddam's force. That was done in 6 weeks. Then you needed the big force right behind it to come in to maintain the order.
Yeah, maybe even some troops that were trained in, you know, policing as opposed to invading and blowing up.
Somebody, like you say, somebody had the military police experience instead of just the shoot and kill experience.
Right, the whole maintaining order thing. And of course, well,
good order. That's no
but fun. But you know, we could do this for the rest of the night, Luke, because the fact of the matter is, what you need on the ground to that would have maintained a semblance of order after we had gotten rid of Saddam, and arguably, you know, one, this war was wrong. Nothing will ever make it have been right. Okay, but if you're going to work along the paradigm that the Bushies set forth. After you've deposed Saddam and gotten him on the run, you build a coalition, sort of like Bush's daddy did. That was wrong too.
That's where you should either brought in UN or NATO forces.
Well, no, right? See, okay.
But I mean, once you're done with the combat,
right? But yeah, call it a UN force if that's what works. But the fact of the matter is, you needed a bunch of Jordanians and Egyptians. And arguably the Turks, Syrians,
the Turks. You know what I mean?
Turks.
Well, you put them in the south part. Away
yeah,
from
see,
the Turks.
Yeah. I'm not bringing the Turks to the party.
Okay, I understand.
Because everything I know about Turkey, I learned from MASH and the guy who got up out of his anesthesia and used a mallet and hit it into the table and yelled "Chin Lee" a lot. That's no, I'm kidding.
I understand. But I know how they are about the Kurds. It's
but
like,
you bring
don't you brought them in. You had to put them totally away from them.
There is, you know, there is a value to language.
Oh, yeah.
To a certain extent, we were very fortunate in the Second World War in that we had German speakers in this country, and we utilized them to the best of our abilities.
The people up around Wisconsin, up Milwaukee, where you had a whole bunch of
yeah, sure, you bet.
Generation German families.
Right. Oh, you know, or out of Pennsylvania, whatever. And we used them to good advantage in Germany in the Second World War. On the other hand, we didn't, no, any Arab speakers that we had, the vast majority of them, we fired for being gay.
How dare they? You know how it is. It's like, God, you already know they're gay. So what? Who's going to blackmail them?
Mm-hmm.
You
know, I know.
That's one of the big arguments.
You, but,
oh,
but,
be blackmail.
Yeah.
Like, well, you know it.
In any occupation, language is critical.
I know.
And as a consequence, but it just goes to show how stupid the Bush administration is. And frankly, the little social climbers at the Pentagon who signed off on these plans.
Well, I was telling Agnes, I sat here and watched Winkin, Blinkin, and Nod walk across the TV screen a minute ago. They were showing Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld. There's the ceremony. I'm sitting here going, good Lord, just one Latin vote, please. Just one.
Yeah, but see, the... That, I don't know. That God went on vacation 2,000 years ago or something. I don't know.
How did you enjoy the thing over at Common Dreams, the Rocky Anderson story?
Oh, isn't it, you know, I got to think. I couldn't help reading that without thinking about Dennis Kucinich. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see those two guys team up.
Well, you know, it's like it's down near the end of the story is, and I still, you know, I know why. It's because we still have to fight the DLC in our own party. But why in the world? I don't know when the next time Hatch is up for election. Why in the world we aren't getting him ready to run against somebody like an Orrin Hatch? Because you mean from everything you read about him, he is very popular out there locally.
Oh yeah, but well that and
really well liked.
And Salt Lake City has a reasonably progressive community too. I mean, that's how he got himself elected. It's once you get outside of Salt Lake City that you run into the special underwear crowd.
But you know what I mean? It's sort of like, guys, if you're going to take down Orrin Hatch or somebody along those lines, that's where you got to start planning now. I don't mean you have to start running now, but the Democratic Party has to start to already be putting the money in place.
Well, there's truth that you have to start running now. You know, as our good friend Wayne has noted on a number of occasions, Republicans don't take off years.
No.
I mean, their campaign for 08 started at about 12:01 a.m. on November the 8th. If it hadn't already started on the 7th.
Oh, yeah. You know, but like I say, it's one of those things. It's like, guys, you know, I mean, I accept, you know, I don't want the person, the senator or the congressman out campaigning for money right away. You know, I mean, especially this time, we need to get to work on
no,
that.
No, there's work to be done. I understand that,
but like I say, his organization,
right, and the
layout, paperwork, you know, whatever you want to say.
And the people who aren't in office, who have an interest in it, the sooner they start, the better off they are. I think that's one of the valuable things about what Dennis Kucinich has done. Get started now. Get the grassroots thing built. Motivate the progressive base. Pull them to you so that...
you can't wait till the last second.
Right, and give them something to fight for, something to talk about, something to believe in.
Oh, my God. Sitting here watching, I've got the sound off on Hardball. Guess who the guest is this week on Beat the Press?
Oh, I can't wait.
Our friend, Newt.
God. Oh, God, God, God. You know, you got McCain. Wandering around.
Him and Joe.
He's upped his troop requirements, hasn't he?
What's it now, 40 or 30?
30, I think. Okay, he started out at 20. Now, you know, I got 20. Can I have 30? 30. You know, pretty soon it'll be, you know, he'll be into full-scale LBJ escalation mode.
Well, the way they're talking, you know what I mean, listening to the news tonight, that if you listen to it, and too many of our news people, of course, will not make the link, is that if you sit and watch this, I mean, that's all they're doing is they're like, the Bush administration is like, well, we don't need anything with that Baker Hamilton thing. You know, that was just sort of a thought. You know what I mean? The more and more you hear about it, it's like the only thing they want out of it, apparently, is the way forward. That's all they want is just
a new way forward.
Apparently, that's the only thing they want out of this, just that. Everything else is like, no, we can't even think about that, because apparently, was it now Condi and Ember saying, no, we're not going to talk to anybody in the region.
Yeah, I know. Jeez.
It's like, guys, you do understand what the word diplomacy means. It means talking to people.
Oh, no, well, yeah, I know. But was it Bill Nelson or Ben Nelson that went to Syria?
Bill, the one from Florida.
Yeah, and the White House is already quietly trying to threaten him. Next, I'm no Bill Nelson fan, but he's going to wake up with a horse's head in his bed.
Well, I saw one of the stories was the boys over at the F Word Network were jumping on it, and somebody was saying, well, nobody's saying anything about Spector, who apparently is going on some of these visits.
Well, no, of course, you know, no, because Spector, that doesn't fit the mold, Luke. You know, surrendercrats. You know, we want to surrender to the Syrians. You know, never mind the fact that the Bush administration itself was actively thanking the Syrian government for protecting our embassy against a terrorist attack there. Nah, can't do it.
Well, you know, it's like we've said before. I still think the greatest crime so far of this whole administration was the fact that. Well, there's some others, but after 9/11, if somebody had brains, of course that lets everybody else in the Bush administration out. But if somebody had brains, they could have made some inroads in the Middle East right then. That, you know what I mean? That they could have pushed a whole lot of not pushed stuff, but they could have got some dialogue going. You know, that they haven't had going in years, because everybody was like, say. Wanting to be on our side, and we were like, "You don't do such and such. You ain't on our side. You're the enemy."
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, we had a sympathy card from Iran, for God's sakes.
I know. Well, I mean, it was like they were. I remember them showing, you know, pictures of, I think it was like Tehran, and they were showing people out in the street protesting against the Taliban. And it's like,
well, see,
we wasted that.
There are so many dynamics at work there, Luke. That. And it's not just ordinary Americans who aren't thinking about it. It's highly paid people in the Bush administration that aren't thinking about it. You know, we're all first of all, we've got the absolute there's no doubt about it. It is absolutely unproven that the Iranians are in any way trying to build a bomb. Okay.
Yeah.
But if we assume for a moment that the Iranians want a bomb, okay. Why would the Iranians want a bomb? Well, the reason that we're given here in the United States and people are given in Great Britain and so forth is that the Iranians want a bomb so that they can nuke Israel. Okay? Now, the minute that Iran has one bomb, they will be out-bombed by about 100 by Israel. Okay?
This is the same Israel who will not agree to certain things that are in the IAEA and all this.
Right, but we can take Israel out of the equation. Take a look at the map. Who's got a bomb that's near Iran?
Which would it be? Pakistan.
That would be Pakistan and India. Neither of whom have a damn drop of oil, but they got nukes. Now, if you're Iran and you want a bomb, maybe you want it to create a balance of terror in the region there.
Well, you know, if it's
because
like,
there
if
is a history.
Everybody else has got one. It's like, where's mine?
Yeah, well, there's a history of cross-border invasions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you've got, I want. Now, the Pakistanis don't have anything that the Iranians want. The Indians arguably have Kashmir, and Pakistan wants that. But Iran has oil, and India and Pakistan both would dearly love to control the access to it. I mean, is this does that have a ring of truth to it?
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm surprised. You know, like say somewhere down the line, now that of course that quote unquote the pipeline that meant nothing, of course, I'm surprised that the Pakistan or the Indians haven't tried to come over into the Afghanistan area to take control of that.
Well,
they control that pipeline.
But see, it's this kind of thinking that isn't being the American people, as Andy says, are used.
Mm-hmm.
We are whipsawed into a bunch of stuff that for ulterior motives that have absolutely no relevance to the real situation on the ground.
Well, you know, a lot of we were talking about it a long time ago. I remember this. We talked about the fact that a big chunk of what the Bush administration's done over the years is they've sat there and gone. You know, have to do this. Don't pay attention. Come on, you gotta make the decision now. Don't think about it. Come on, you gotta make the decision now. Just keep you moving. Don't think what we're doing. Just keep moving.
Yeah, the pea's gotta be under one of these shells, doesn't it? Yeah, it's under that one. Oh, damn, you lose. Here, another dollar. I bet you find it next time.
And by the time you look around, your wallet's empty. My golly, isn't that amazing? But let me let you go on. Y'all have a good weekend. Getting that time of night again.
All right, well, Luke, you have yourself a good. Wow, we're at the weekend, aren't we?
Yeah. Hey, what's for curious? What's the schedule for the Christmas thing coming up? Or
we're going to be live and hot all the way up to Friday. Let's see, 50. Yeah, 22nd. Yeah, the 22nd will be our Christmas show.
Are you going to the Outback?
No,
you're going to the Gator.
Yeah, we're
going to the Gator.
No, I'd like to go to the Gator, but nah, we'll be here because I can't. If it was a few years ago and I could take Dad with me, I don't think there would have been anything more fun.
Well, that's okay. You'll sit there and watch it on the TV and have a better seat and be comfortable.
I'm a very superstitious critter, Luke. I'm concerned that if I went to the Gator Bowl. They'd have to add another digit to the scoreboard to keep up with the scoring because we'd lose. If I go to the game, we're sunk.
I know. I have that effect sometimes too. It's like there's a black cloud somewhere and it's hunting me.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And you know, I'm disturbed about this game to begin with because Georgia Tech is at best 25th in the country and unranked in the other poll. And in many ways, we don't have a lot to gain from this.
No.
We can't climb in the polls. As a result of this, but we can darn sure drop out of them all the way if we screw it up.
It's one of those things, sometimes with these things, you almost wish you were back in the old system, you know, it's like where they had them already picked a month ahead, because sometimes the way they do this now is like, God, that's all we got left to play? Oh, no.
Exactly.
We were sitting there going, you know, because we had nine in the SEC, and we were just sitting there going, somebody's going to get the shaft out of this.
Well, you know, by the same token, I've got lots of ill will left over for the Atlantic Coast Conference. So, you know, Virginia Tech bailed out, Miami bailed out, Boston College bailed out, and look who the ACC championship was between this year. That would be Wake Forest and Georgia Tech.
That was a good game.
Hey Frank Beamer, how's that move working out for you, buddy?
I tell you, Frank lost a little bit of luster. It's like, Frank, you can still block a punt, but that's about it.
Well, you know, his coaching credentials for the last 10 years or so have depended entirely on whether or not he has someone under center whose last name is Vic and can be kept out of prison. Oh, that was just tacky of me.
That's okay. You're allowed to be tacky every once in a while. You know how it is.
Well,
don't get it out or it festers if you leave it inside. You know?
Luke, have a good weekend. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And onward to our good friend Andrew, calling from New York. Andrew, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm all right. You?
Happy holidays to you. I'm
Thank you.
Fine.
You too?
Called up to say something about Senator Harry Reid.
All right.
Saw something on Raw Story today. Said something like he slipped in a couple of riders on some legislation without everybody getting a chance to check it out.
What before the adjournment?
Yes.
Okay. Namely?
There was $4 million for a hospice, which I don't have that much problems with, you know, but still, everybody should know about it. And then there was some kind of land deal, something with some land, a little bit of land. And Mr. Reed, all I have to say is I don't like that, and that's, kind of screwed up. First of all, we have the moral high ground right now. That is the Democrats. And by Senator Reed doing that and being the majority leader, that looks like the ultimate hypocrisy. So I think he should apologize to the American people and to the Congress for doing that.
Well,
that's what we're trying to get away from.
It sort of takes away from the whole transparency argument that they're putting forward, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
And by the same token, I'm with you. I don't have any gripes with a hospice.
I don't have any problems with that, but that still should be disclosed. It's all about disclosure now.
Yeah.
And, we've had, the secrecy and all of that and slipping in stuff by the Republicans.
We don't do that.
Yeah, we don't do that. That pisses me off. That's why the Democrats won the elections, because the Republicans were doing that.
Well, see, and this plays into something, Andrew, that I heard yesterday come out of the mouth of the oxymoron. He was talking about the condition of Senator Tim Johnson. And he said, Flimbaugh refers to Reed as Dingy Harry.
Yeah.
All right. He said, "My friends, if Dingy Harry wants Tim Johnson to be alive till the 2008 elections, you may rest assured he will remain in a hospital bed at Georgetown University or George Washington University Medical Center with all manner of treatment." And he went off and on, basically saying that Reed would determine whether or not Johnson lives or dies. And it was sickening. And the thing is, when I hear this about it, it serves in the mind not of me and you, but it serves in the minds of the right wing and those baffling centrists whom I have yet to meet one of. It serves in their mind to validate what the right wing is saying.
Exactly. And it's like, I don't understand where he's coming from with doing that, except for greed. And that's what it boils down to. But if he wants to go and be a Republican, he needs to go and, and disclose that. And we can go from there. But as far as him doing that, and he's being the highest, right now, ranking senator-elect, he's going to be the majority speaker in the Senate, I think that's crap.
Well, it does.
And that turned my stomach. And we were having a good week this week. And then he goes and pulls some crap like that. And not happy about it.
Did he,
I would like to see him on Meet the Press on Sunday apologizing. And when the Congress goes into session in January, they better repeal both of those earmarks. And like I said,
yeah, and then deal with it on a straight up, up and up basis.
Exactly.
Well, I'm not. You say you found this at Raw Story?
Yeah.
I'll have to go and have a look at it because I'm not up to speed on it. But I don't like anything that.
He's pushing that stuff in there under the cover of darkness. He's pushing it under there, nobody. And that's what the Republic. I'm sick of that. We had 6 years of that, 6 hardcore years of it.
Yeah, this is supposed to be the light shining in and chasing off the vampires. Now that's what November 7th was about.
Exactly, and I'm not happy about it. And no self-respecting Democrat, progressive, independent, independent Democrat, whatever you want to call yourself, anybody who cares about this Republic should not.
Well, let's take the example.
Blind eye to that.
Let's take the example of a hospice, Andrew. Again, we've both agreed, hospice does God's work, so to speak.
Yeah.
It is laudable and
comfort
it is noble.
Care. Yeah, comfort care and
if it is all the things that we say it is, and taking people to an at least dignified end of their days, is everything that we say it is as progressives. Then we should be able to not only put that in we should not only be able to fund that as a function of decent, upright society, we should be able to fund that in broad daylight and ask the question, why are we only doing one?
Exactly.
Why aren't we doing 100?
Exactly. And that should be in day one. That should be in the original thing. That should be, you don't have about this. You shouldn't have to slip that in.
No, unless that's nothing to be ashamed of. If something's
a little shady with that particular hospice, you know, but hey.
Yeah, if it turns out it's the Harry Reid Memorial Hospice and he's the majority shareholder, then there's a reason for doing it in the still of the night.
So, what's up, Harry Reid?
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I'm gonna go and read it and try to follow up a little bit on it because.
Yeah, I mean, I just...
You know, what we had from Dennis Kucinich the other night, I know I keep talking about this conversation, but I'm inspired by it, Andrew. And what he said about the moral choices that we make every time we make an appropriation for the war.
Yeah.
You know, hospice is valuable. The geriatric, gerontological care is valuable. Neonatal care is valuable. And we should be talking about it in broad, open daylight and make the Republicans be the ones who stand up and say, no, America doesn't deserve this. And when you do it in the dark and still of the night, such as you've described, you've taken away your own moral argument.
Yes. And that's why I don't understand where he's coming from. I mean, it's like, that's why I say Kucinich. I look at Kucinich's, you know, track record, and I don't know it 100% verbatim, whatever. But from what I've seen, what I read, he walks the walk and he talks the talk.
Yeah.
His wife, you know, she's right by his side. She walks the walk, she talks the talk. I don't see that coming from, you know, people like in the Democratic Party, people like Mr. Reid, Senator Reid, because what he did on the last day of this crap 109th Congress is like, what are you doing, man? I mean, you're like, you're throwing sugar in the tank.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're putting the chain around the axle and hooking it to the phone pole before we can crank the engine and get going in January.
Exactly. But, you know, I like Kucinich Obama right now. That's what I like. I mean, Obama, the jury's still out with me. The jury's still out with him on certain issues, but...
Well, you know, there's something... He's thinking about stuff, though. It's obvious, Andrew. And frankly, I'm glad he's thinking about being worried about being shot.
Well, that's another story, but hey, that's...
We do, you know, we do that to our good leaders, blow them away.
Yes. Well, that's a given, but...
And it's a valid concern for him, especially with the story that came out about two, three weeks ago. It hit the British press. I didn't see it make much of a splash over here. The fact that it has now been determined, I mean, this is factual. This isn't speculation. This isn't, you know, you don't have to run the movie slowly to find out if it's down into the left or down into the right. It's just a damn fact. There were three CIA international operatives in the Ambassador Hotel the night that Bobby was killed. Who weren't supposed to be there.
That doesn't surprise. We all know what goes on. I mean, come on. This is Goodfellas. This is real life Goodfellas. People, you want to watch it on TV, if you first turn into this program and you've seen Goodfellas the movie, well, come to Goodfellas real life. It's no joke. So, you know, strap on your seatbelts and, you know, just, hey, if you listen, you're going to get pissed if you have any heart about you. If not, then why don't you go on and join Bushco?
Well,
that's all I got to say, Bob.
All right, Andrew, you guys have a great holiday. Yep, hope we'll hear from you before then.
All righty.
Take care.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye now. It's our good friend Andrew calling from upstate New York. Let's take a break. I don't know, we might have some Christmas music going. Oh, it sounds like Christmas music. You're welcome to join in the conversation. 877-443-2366 is the number. 877, the numeral 4, head on. You're welcome to join in the conversation because, by God, this is Conversation Radio, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. In Iraq, three American servicemen were killed today, two Marines and one soldier. That brings the death toll for U.S. troops this month so far to at least 54. In Gaza, violence broke out today after tens of thousands of Hamas backers rallied in support of their prime minister. Yesterday, a gun battle on the border wounded his son. In recent days, there has been increasing violence between the Fatah and Hamas parties. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is asking Congress for tens of millions of dollars to increase the security forces of Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. The U.S. hopes to reduce the violence and tensions currently plaguing the Palestinian territories. In Beijing, U.S. trade delegates open negotiations on key issues, including stabilization of Chinese currency rates and a crackdown on widespread copyright abuses. The U.S. wants to reduce its massive trade deficit with China, which may reach a record $240 billion this year. In Cuba, a delegation of 10 U.S. lawmakers who favor the easing of sanctions arrived in Havana today for a three-day visit. Also, U.S. Intelligence Chief John Negroponte told the Washington Post everything he's seen indicates Cuban President Fidel Castro is dying. In Bhutan, King Jigme Wangchuck has abdicated his throne to his son. The monarch has ruled for 30 years. In 2008, a new constitution makes Bhutan a parliamentary democracy. In San Jose, a federal judge has just declared unconstitutional lethal injection as a method for execution in California. The judge has already placed a moratorium on capital punishment in the state. In Florida, Governor Jeb Bush halted all capital punishment today following a bungled execution there this week. The medical examiner in charge says the needles were inserted incorrectly into the prisoner. His death took twice as long as usual and required two doses of lethal chemicals. In the Pacific Northwest, one of the worst storms in recent memory. More than a million customers have lost power. Streets are flooded. Winds exceeding 100 miles an hour are felling trees. At least four people have died. Blizzard conditions are continuing to hamper rescue efforts on Oregon's Mount Hood for three hikers missing since Sunday. In Indianapolis, more than 300 people became ill after eating at an Olive Garden restaurant last weekend. Health officials are investigating. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
The U.S. and 23 other countries have joined together to expand an international anti-malaria program started by the White House last year. The $1.2 billion effort is focused on halting the spread of malaria through the use of mosquito nets and abatement programs. Worldwide, more than a million people die from malarial infections each year. Toronto scientists say they've made a breakthrough in diabetes research. They say they've discovered the body's nervous system helps trigger diabetes by injecting a substance into diabetic mice to counteract malfunctioning pancreatic pain neurons. The mice were cured. The U.S. and China have agreed to allow NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange to open formal business offices in China. No timetable has been announced, but dozens of Chinese companies already list their shares on both exchanges. The head of Morgan Stanley is getting a Christmas bonus of $40 million in stock and options. The Wall Street Journal says the bonus is likely to be topped by other competitors. The head of Goldman Sachs is expecting a $50 million bonus in his Christmas stocking. Light sweet crude ended trading today at $63.43 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 29 points at 12,445. The Nasdaq up 3 at 2457. The S&P 500 up 14 at 1427. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty.
I was at the mother load. We've had wonderful conversation tonight to end the week. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, and let's go to the phones. Let's do what this is about, Conversation Radio. Sarge joins us from southern Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, I had to call you and find out something. There's a rumor going around that you're going to be running for president, and your running mate is going to be Bruce Birch. Is there any truth to that?
Lies, all lies.
Of course, I understand also that if you don't accept, you're going to be drafted by the chat room.
Let's see, how does this work? If nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve. How's that?
Oh, man, what a bummer. I guess we're stuck with Kucinich then, huh?
Well, you know, you could be stuck with worse. In fact, I've got a list of their names here right now. Giuliani, McCain.
Bush.
Brownback.
Bush.
Tom Tancredo, that crazier than a run-over dog congressman from Colorado, he's in the race.
Hey, I'm just be glad Trent Lott isn't running.
Oh, God, please.
Hey, listen, I wanted to pass on a compliment. Joe did a wonderful job this morning. I hope everybody will go back to the archives and download it and listen. No, he did a wonderful job. I'm so proud of Joe for such a splendid interview.
Well, you know, I wish that... You know, well, first of all, let me compliment Joe, too. Joe has been an absolute trooper. Dr. Bill, by virtue of obligations that he has away from the microphone, has been away from the microphone a good bit lately. And Joe has been an absolute trooper in sitting in. And Joe's got a style that is absolutely all his own. And, I enjoy running his program because it's... It's kind of in your face, isn't it?
Yeah, I enjoy his show. I think he's a lot of fun. And, you know, most of the time when someone's not doing a lot of research behind their show, you think, well, they bound not to be too good. But he's pretty on top of things for having no more time than he does.
Well, you're an old football coach. You know what it means to sandbag, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think Joe does a little sandbagging. Oh, God, I haven't done any research. I'm not prepared. And then the next thing you know, he's got 2 hours of just the solid stuff that reaches out and grabs you by the throat and drags you along with him. He...
You think he's poor-mouthed as well,
like
a bear used to do.
Oh, look, yeah, I grew up watching the bear sitting there with the bottle of Coca-Cola and the Golden Flake potato chips and... Well, you know, next week we're playing the little old ladies' university for the deaf and blind, and I tell you what, they got a heck of a linebacking core, and I just don't know if we can stand up against them. They may be too much for us, you know. And then next week you check the score, and it's like 962-0.
Yeah, I always loved the Bears. We beat him in Tuscaloosa his last year.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he took the fun out of the victory because he got on and. On his show, and the announcer said, well, don't you think y'all were just kind of overlooking Southern Miss? And Bear says, no, let me tell you something. He said, Southern Miss just beat our butts off. He said, well, you were ready for them, but they was just ready for us. And he said, don't you dare say that they didn't deserve this victory. They did. They won it. And that was so classy that it just kind of took the steam out of the wind. You know, you just kind of said,
yeah, you felt bad for beating him.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you'd stop and say, wait a minute. This
yeah,
is
it's a daggum minute. That, yeah, right.
But I love the Bear. He was my favorite. I just...
Well, you know, so many people did, and that's why Alabama's still searching for a coach right now.
Yeah, they need to get past the Bear. I love the Bear, but, you know, it's like you were talking about with radio. Every person has to have their own style, and... Jeff Bauer is successful because he is Jeff Bauer. He's not trying to be Pie Van or Bear Bryant or anybody.
Well, but see, that's the other thing about Jeff Bauer. Jeff Bauer is successful because Jeff Bauer is where he wants to be. Jeff Bauer is home with Mama. You know, he's a Southern Miss boy.
Yeah. Well, he's
he's a Southern Miss grad, isn't he?
Yeah. He was our quarterback. In fact, of the top five. I don't know if this is still true, but just a couple of years ago, of the top five quarterbacks at Southern Miss, he coached four of them.
Oh wow. Well, see, I've got a list of my three favorite Southern Miss grads, or Southern Miss students. Okay, because I know one of them isn't a grad. Jeff Bauer, and Jimmy Buffett, and Sarge.
I met Jimmy Buffett. In fact, I was sitting in the union at Southern Miss one day, and this guy walks in and says, "May I sit down with you?" And I said, "Sure, go ahead." And he was drinking a cup of coffee, and I said, "What's up?" And he said, "Oh, we're trying to get ready for a show, and I'm taking a little break." And I didn't even know who the guy was, and I walked out. Yeah, I walked out, and there's Jimmy Buffett giving a free concert, and it was Jimmy Buffett came sat down with me.
Well, you know, he's got those USM street creds. That's like the, oh God, boy, now we're time traveling. My mom and dad, when I was a kid, were they were looking for a new sofa or easy chair, end table, something like that, and we were in a furniture store down home, and you know, they were, you know, well, this one or that one with the claw feet, and this just absolutely all a Twitter salesperson came up and leaned over to my dad and said, and started pointing and said, "That's George Jones." And in the same big old stage whisper, my dad leans over and goes, "Who's George Jones?"
That's a good one. Well, I tell you, there's a guy at Southern Miss. He went on to play with the Houston Oilers. His name is Richard Byrd. And he married Bobby Collins, the former coach at Southern Miss, and went to SMU. Got them put on probation. But he married his daughter. And Richard was a nice guy. Every time he'd see me, he'd speak to me. But I never knew who he was. And I'd look at him, and he'd come up, and he'd always make a point of seeing me. And it used to irritate me because I'd be talking to somebody, and he'd come running up, hey, you know. And I just, you know, I was really kind of put off with him. And so one day I was in the dorm talking to Gerald Bayless, and guy passed by, and girl goes, "Hey, Richard." And I said, "Richard who?" And he said, "That's Richard Byrd." I said, "Oh my God, that's the guy that, oh man." And so at the Senior Bowl, his senior year, I happened to be at the game, and I yelled out, "Hey, Richard." And you know what? He didn't speak to me.
Ah.
I don't think he heard me, though, so I guess he hasn't.
Well, you know, considering you were yelling from the nosebleed section.
Well, I mean, hey, if it's good enough for Euchre. But I really wanted to pass on it. If people haven't heard it, go to the archives, download that show that Joe did today. I think they'll really enjoy it. And those two women, one of them's from New Hampshire, and the other one, I forget where she's from. But their stories were really fascinating. I was really tickled that they were in Jim's office at the time.
Oh, that was a fascinating story.
It is, and you know, I'd heard about those two ladies, and I had never had an opportunity to even speak to them. So I was really tickled to get to say hello to them. They have made an impact, and it's so wonderful when people that will do stuff like those two, and Shelley Esposito and them, you know, to put their lives basically on hold to come down and help.
Well, change, you know, change, it's proof that change can be accomplished one person at a time.
Oh, by the way, that email you from your Miss Rawls.
Yeah, Miss Rawls.
I got some bad news for her. If she listens to the show, Joe's show this morning, she'll find out that the people who are taking the hardest hit in the Katrina recovery area, senior citizens. And disabled.
That Republican standing up for the invalids, the disabled, and the infirm, that doesn't fly with me. See, one Terry Schiavo roadshow does not a policy make.
That's right. But it, you know, it's they are really having senior citizens and disabled are really having to fight with this.
Well, life is hard enough under the best of circumstances. I can't imagine what it is now, Sarge.
Oh, that's one reason I'm so happy that Head On and Nova M are so good about giving us the airtime, because there is so much that's going on down here that is just hideous. And I said it before, and I'll say it until the day I die. But if you want to take one incident, I don't care. Take any incident you want. I don't believe you have a more sound reason to impeach this group than you do with just Katrina alone.
I think you're probably right.
I mean, Iraq, okay, yeah, that is certainly impeachable. You know, I totally disagreed with it when we went in. I thought it was a bad move. I didn't like it. And they did lie us in, but they skirted around the truth on that. But Katrina, they have no excuse. I mean, this storm was coming days in advance. It crossed Florida to get over here. They had plenty of time to prepare, to be ready, to have things done. And the cost?
Well, you know, the fact that it told me a lot in the days immediately following Katrina, especially, and this is more New Orleans related, but the fact that they honest to God, Sarge, they spent more time working up their prepackaged attack on Ray Nagin.
Yeah.
Than they did on dealing with the realities of the situation on the ground. They were ready. I mean, you know, if you watched, especially the right wing garbage like Fox, man, they had everything in place to drop the hammer on Ray Nagin.
Well, you remember those commercials that Bush ran during the campaign where he was sitting on the swing and he goes, yeah, I know exactly where I want to take America. I've got my goals for America. And then he gives that little smirky smile, and I was thinking, oh my God, you know, we are in super trouble now.
Yeah, there's a parody Time magazine cover that's just got George Bush's face on it. Looks just like a Time magazine, and across the photograph it just says, "We're effed."
Yeah, and that's true. But you know, I don't know. I wish there was some way that people could actually see the failures on the Mississippi coast in Louisiana and New Orleans, because these people, I mean, they found a dead body 3 weeks ago in New Orleans.
Yeah, not a new one. I read that.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's, you know, that just shows you that. And World Trade Center, they found people, they found bodies there not too long ago. I mean, geez.
Yeah, because they couldn't be bothered to write.
It's senile. I mean, and what really bothers me is, like Jim was saying today, he was up in Jackson, and someone said, "You people down there need to get past that Katrina." Well, you can't get past it if you're not getting the help to get past it.
Well, you know, I don't know how you hear something like that and not just throw a punch.
Well, you know, Jim's a hell of a fine man, and I admire him greatly. He can really, some of the things that he hears, I couldn't stand it. I just couldn't stand it.
No, just start screaming and go right out of the room and keep screaming until you couldn't scream anymore. I know.
I had people right here. I've been trying to work with the church to get them to get some people down there and do some work or take up donations, a special collection or something to send to Jim and stuff of this nature. And did you know I can't hardly get a word in with those people? They won't even halfway consider it. I'm still working on it. And what's sad is a lot of these people have children living down there, or brothers and sisters and stuff like this, and yet they still are too apathetic. And it's,
well, but see, Sarge, it's beyond apathy. It's not just that. These people have to, and I mean have to, believe that everything's okay so that they can go on living their lives and ignore it, because not ignoring it is painful.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like I go to the bank, and this lady I talk with, she's a nice person. I think the world of her in most every other regard. But whenever I start to talk to her about what's going on down there, she just doesn't seem to connect. It's just like, oh, he just said Katrina. Beep, turned off.
Right. At this point, there's been a paradigm created by the national media where now when you talk about Katrina, you have to show the fact that New Orleans now has a healthy contingent of drunks back on Bourbon Street because Katrina's over.
But it's not.
No.
And it's not only New Orleans.
Sarge, you know, we've talked about the fact that the casinos are up and running. How far do you have to go from the casinos? I mean, literally, you know, if you just set out walking, how far would you have to go before you see the failure?
You don't even have to go one step. Ray and I were standing at the casino. One was open and one was about open. And we were standing there by it, and we could look just across Highway 90 and see an area where virtually nothing was standing. And you know, houses didn't run, and you could see people pulling up to their houses and stop, and they just get on the back of their truck, and they just put their head down, and you could just see them hurting, and then they'd get up and go do whatever they were going to do and come back, and you could just see the pain in them. And this was, and we were standing right by a casino looking at it, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You didn't even have to take a step. And I mean, when we went by there, there's an old VA hospital. It's one of the first things Bush shut down. It was a mental and drug rehab alcohol unit, part of the Biloxi VA, and he closed it down. And a lot of mental patients, PTSD, you know, a lot of these people.
Goodbye, good luck.
Right, and they're gone. But we saw the buildings, and they were just wiped out. They were devastated, but there's a lot of area there that would be good to have had trailers on, you know, that they could have put people on temporarily. Of course, if they're going to have to stay there 5-6 years, forget it, but it's just really
well, see, and that's the tense dynamic that's going on there, Sarge. You, on the one hand, you've got FEMA out there with the legal case with which you're familiar, throwing people out without due process rights, and the judge having an absolute purple polka dotted blue screaming hissy. But the other end of FEMA is saying, well, you know, rebuilding's going to take a while. And Jim Yancey was absolutely correct. There are those out there who would like to turn this into a money-making cash cow industry that'll, you know, take care of the kids' college education because it's going to take 10 years and it's going to become a thing.
Yeah, Jim is too good a fella to own up to this, but he knows it. The governor and the Republicans down here, they really are planning on making it a mini Las Vegas and a luxury resort. And he knows that. Jim and I have talked about it, but it's not going to work here for one. This area, our beaches, they're okay, but they're not that sparkling clean. They're not anything that's going to really attract people with a lot of money. The coast is kind of the poor man's Riviera, if you will, and it functions better as that. That's exactly what it is. That's the way it should be.
Beaches, when you get right down to it, I guess we're drawn to them for a variety as humans, a variety of psychological reasons. But beaches are not. God didn't put them there for recreational purposes. They're what protects the inland structures.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people are familiar with the Outer Banks of North Carolina, but they seldom realize that there's an entire string of barrier islands along the Gulf Coast as well, whether it's Padre Island in Texas or Gulf Shores or Dauphin Island or the barrier islands off the Mississippi Gulf Coast. You know, those things develop geologically and geographically for a reason.
Well, you know, that's one thing that's really hurting Lott and Cochran got this bill passed where they're going to be able to do more drilling in the Gulf, and they're going to be able to drill on some of these barrier islands, and I just really hate that because
that was one of the little things that got slid through with the dying last gasps of the Republican 109th Congress. And again, it's a question of I don't know how much coverage it's received, because I'm very, very not guilty of watching network news anymore. I just can't do it. It's beyond me. That makes me want to scream.
I hadn't in a year, and I quit watching. First of all, Katrina pretty well did my chances in for cable for a while, because the prices shot up so high I had to eliminate something. And then when I got back to where I could get cable back on, I looked at it and said, I hadn't missed it. So I just, I haven't bothered. And
well, but you know, off the coast of Florida, off the Gulf Coast, those barrier islands, guess what? Yeah, guess what you get? You get oil derricks.
Yeah, I can see. Oh, let's go out to Ship Island and see Fort Massachusetts. And you get out there, and right next to it, you got this.
That's exactly what they sound like.
I mean, it's just. It's so disgusting. I hate it. We have them, you know, we had them back in the 70s, I think it was. We had them all over the area here. My aunt even had one on her land that the oil company set up. And, man, those things, they're all night long, and you get that sound all night, and they just drive you batty. And this fossil fuel stuff, it has to go. We have got to change our environmental policy.
Well, I mean, my God, you're in southern Mississippi, Sarge. It would be nothing. The technology exists. It's pricey, but it's not that tough of an install or anything. It would be nothing to create a situation where Sarge never pays another power bill.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
But you understand that's dangerous.
Yeah.
Because the guys who are lining the pockets of your state legislature. And your governor, and your senators, and your members of the House, there's plenty of PACs coming from. Oh God, what's the power company down there?
Mississippi Power.
Yeah.
Southern Company.
Yeah, that's right. The whole a Southern Company. I remember the ads. And whether it's Mississippi Power, when I was a student at the University of Alabama, I paid Alabama Power Company, a Southern Company. Georgia Power, a Southern Company. And you know and there are ramifications to this. Because they can't, you know, they're scared to death of it. We're living it right now up here in West Virginia, Sarge, because, as I've mentioned before, there is an absolutely magnificent, high-tech, cutting-edge-of-the-technology project for a wind farm in Greenbrier County. Now, Greenbrier County is the home of one of the great old Grand Dame resorts of the United States. You know, been here since 17 God knows what, the Greenbrier, okay? I mean, you and me, if we started saving now, we wouldn't be able to afford one night in a room there next, 2 years from now. Real fancy schmancy, you know, you buy a 50 by 100 lot to build a little cottage on, and the 50 by 100 lot there is, you know, $200,000. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. So the Greenbrier's there, and nowhere, anywhere near the Greenbrier, they're going to put this wind farm on top of an old strip mine, for God's sakes. And the people in Greenbrier County, backed by the CSX Railroad Corporation, because CSX hauls coal, CSX owns the Greenbrier, and you know, they've created this faked up, phonied up, ginned up, dummied up, bogus environmental group that opposes the wind farms because it'll destroy their, this is the word that just makes me want to hit my head in the microphone, it'll destroy their viewscape.
Oh, man, let me borrow my voice. Ice pick.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, right through the eardrum. It'll destroy their viewscape. So meanwhile, because we can't encourage solar power in a place that has sunshine, really good sunshine, the better part of the year, i.e. southern Mississippi, southern Alabama, the Florida Panhandle, southern Georgia, the Southern Company gets to keep on contracting to buy coal that CSX will haul to them that comes from Massey Energy Operations from blown-up mountains in West Virginia. I mean, there's a real linkage between all this stuff, Sarge. You see?
Yeah, it's a racket. But before I get off, and I'm fixing to leave, but I want to say one more time, Jim Yancey's website.
Yes, please.
It's Jackson County Community Services Coalition,
JCCSC.org. JCCSC.org, right?
That's right. And if you can't send money, fine. Go send an email. Jim said the emails that he's getting have really given him a boost. It really makes him feel good to know that people are paying attention. And he's just he has talked so much about how much he is indebted to Head On Radio and Nova M for helping him get out the story on what's going on. So,
well, you know, I don't know if we'll ever be able to accomplish it, but at some point, I would love to have the wherewithal to go down and, you know, and do a week's worth of broadcasting down there. I think that would be an absolutely magnificent trip, because I'd like to talk to the people who are, you know, and it's tough to do when you're just arranging conversations over the telephone. I'd like to talk to the people who are hauling the sheetrock and carrying the bundles of shingles and driving the nails.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to do when we went down there that day, but things just didn't quite pan out like we had hoped for. But that would be something, because there's so much that's just not, I'm not even able to tell it, you know. But even though I'm aware of it, I can't tell it because I'm not finding out about it. Like recycling, there's virtually no recycling going on down here, and now would be a good time to put recycling into action.
Yeah,
they're not doing it. One guy told me he lives in Bay St. Louis, and he has to drive all over the place to recycle, and he said, I think I'm the only one in Hancock County that recycles.
Golly Moses.
So, I mean, there's so much that could be done down here, and we just, but of course, like that nut brain station director.
Oh, yeah, what a freak.
Dave Vincent, he's not helping the situation any, because if he had any decency, if he had any concern about the community, he'd say, okay, we need to start pushing environmental issues. We need to start saying, okay, here's how we can recycle. Here's how we can do this. Here's how we can do that. And we could prevent these future problems. We could take 1 month of what it costs in Iraq. And did you know there's a professor down there at LSU University that has a system that for the cost of 1 month of Iraq could almost hurricane proof the Mississippi, Florida, Louisiana, Alabama Gulf Coast.
Yeah.
And it would minimize.
Well, that's like talking about alternative energy sources, Sarge. Part of the immediate problem out of Katrina, or frankly just about any hurricane, is the power grid down there is so confounded, outdated, and fragile.
Yes, it is. And it's even worse, like I was telling someone in the chat, we get a really hard rainfall, it makes the power flicker here in Columbia, and I'm 85 miles from the coast.
No, I don't doubt it. I mean, look it, we lost power for better than a day here over high winds. Now, granted, they were really weird high winds, but this is the 21st century.
Well, when I talked to Guerrera, and I tried and touch base with her at least once a week, one night I called her, and it wasn't too long ago, maybe 2-3 weeks ago, and it was, and the power was flickering on and off, and they were having just an average rainfall. Just an average rainfall.
Man. I know.
These people are sick, man. These people,
well,
these
see,
Republicans are screwing these people. They're killing people, and it's just.
I know. And the thing is, it's all done out of greed. Okay, I know that the right-wingers just hate it when you say things like greed, but damn it, greed is real. It's a noun, it's concrete, it's verifiable, and you can see it in action in people. The Goldman Sachs guy, the guy that runs Goldman Sachs, the investment banking house, the guy produces nothing. You know, what's the Bible verse? He neither tarries nor he sows. I mean, he does absolutely nothing. He's getting a $50 million Christmas bonus. The guy from Merrill Lynch or one of the others got a $40 million Christmas bonus. And you know what? They're getting these bonuses for doing essentially nothing, Sarge.
And just think, there's a lot of veterans who are going to be homeless on Christmas Day.
Yeah, I'm not jealous of these guys' money. I wouldn't want $50 million. I wouldn't know what to do with $50 million. But, well, yeah, I do. I know what $50 million... I wouldn't know what to do with it for myself, but I know what it would do for other people.
Well, listen, I better let you go.
All right, Sarge, great conversation. Thank you so much for taking your time to call. I do appreciate it.
Well, thank you, because like I said before, every time that we get the word out about what's going on, I like to think that we're saving a life.
I like to think that, too.
Thank you, Bob. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Sarge. Take care. And we roll onward to our good friend Preston calling from Denver. Preston, good to hear from you.
Hey, Bob. Yeah, I'm glad I had the chance this evening to say hello. It's been a while.
It has been a while. You all right?
Yeah, I am.
Good.
I just been kind of preoccupied with various things. I've been traveling to Asheville, North Carolina, actually, a fair amount.
Oh, wow. What a beautiful place that is.
It sure is. My dad lives there. And so I get to visit him from now and again, every now and again. And, yeah, Asheville is a beautiful place. Lots of artists and folk music and...
A very progressive community.
It is. They've got a good community radio station. And actually, when I was driving in from the airport, I was tuning into the radio, and I heard Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Program. And I thought it was on the community radio station in Asheville, but actually... I was receiving it from East Tennessee University.
Yeah, East TSU?
Yeah.
ETSU, yeah.
Yeah, and they had just recently started airing it on their station, so, you know, there's some good media popping up here and there in some places where you wouldn't necessarily expect to find it.
Right.
But also, I was glad that Sarge brought up environmental policy. It might interest him to know that here in Denver, about 2 weeks ago, we hosted something called the Green Build Expo, greenbuildexpo.org, if you want to check it out. But okay. Basically what it is it was a meeting of 13,000 architects, interior designers, carpenters, electricians, and other skilled people who were talking about how to build with a less environmental impact, how to use solar, how to use less water, things like creating packages that aren't like toxic.
Well, and the thing is, none of that is stuff that's going to have to be invented, Preston. It all exists. You know, I think maybe I'm very guilty of criticizing the other side, absolutely. But there's also criticism that can be meted out to a certain extent on our own side. Maybe one of the reasons it's harder to get people to use these things is that we have not appealed to what the other side looks to first. The minute that we show the other side that you can get obscenely filthy rich,
yep,
being green,
yep,
is the day we go over the hump. I think I'm ashamed to say it that way.
It's going to be part of the solution. You know, there's going to be a money appeal. There's going to be a theological appeal. A psychological health appeal, you know, a lot of things, but definitely.
There are people who are motivated by baser instincts.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think if we need to communicate that good news about how we can make a profit without destroying the earth.
Well, you know, where we live, Preston, this house just celebrated its 70th Thanksgiving. Kind of blew me away when I realized that.
Oh, wow.
The folks moved in here for the first time in 1936, and my grandmother designed this house. And apart from the fact that she didn't put any daggum closets in the house, she did a pretty good job because it's held up very well. But, you know, I've got and she sat down and literally designed the house on paper and figured out how much lumber and all of that stuff. And I've got a working list of, you know, the house that someday I get to build.
Great.
And it's gonna have passive solar. It's gonna have active solar. All of these things, and people don't realize it. All these things are profoundly accessible on a residential basis, on a commercial basis. One of the nice things about the carpenters, the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters, the union looks toward this kind of stuff. They have projects out there. They have research going on meaningful green design.
Great.
And it's a chance to move all of that forward.
I found a DVD recently. You know, this stuff isn't just going on here in the U.S. You know, there's also the socially responsible investing going on that's putting billions and billions of dollars into this kind of research and stuff. A lot of governments and local city governments are doing things to meet the Kyoto Protocol mm-hmm. Treaty. You know, sometimes we focus too much on what's going on at the federal level. I mean, I wish it were better, but there's a lot of great stuff going on at the state and local level, but
And, but, that's how the pyramid gets built, Preston. Maybe we're a little bit misguided by trying to make it happen from the federal level down. Just as with progressive politics, if you want a real progressive movement in this country, the onus is on us to go and become members of city councils, members of Democratic executive committees, you know, that kind of thing. Green and energy, the energy sane policy starts there.
And also, if you're not into the political running for office, there are other things like being good communicators, you know, doing our own kind of informal think tanks. I mean, there's enough people listening to this show where we could overwhelm the efforts of some of the privately funded, you know, big oil think tanks and PR firms by ourselves calling into talk radio, writing letters to editors. I think that's a very underutilized forum. Message boards are great. Actually, Amazon, the bookstore online, there's a lot of interesting writing going on there with various progressives reviewing books and that kind of thing. And I found one recently, not a book, but a DVD on Amazon called The Power of Community. And I bring that up because it's an example of how other countries, including what we think of as less developed countries like Cuba, doing just amazing things when it comes to sustainable development.
Right, and some of this they do by dint of necessity, and some of this they do by dedication to their own future.
Yep.
We've put, you know, it's tough to mention Cuba, and I'm not being critical at all, Preston, but it's tough to mention Cuba because you lose an entire segment of the population the minute that you do.
I know, it's sad.
But the thing is, we created the circumstances that made Cuba look in that direction. Brazil is another example. Now, we don't openly hate Brazil, but Brazil says they're going to be fossil fuel free. What's the goal? How many years? I mean, you and me, God willing, will still be around when Brazil is fossil fuel free.
Yeah, it'll be amazing. Japan and Germany, they're doing interesting things. And in fact, Germany, they opened a windmill plant in Fort Madison, Iowa. I think the company is called Siemens. You know, again, we're often focusing on the troubles with the industrial jobs leaving and that kind of thing, deindustrialization with the auto factories and stuff. But there's this windmill going up in Fort Madison, Iowa. And, so they're going to employ like 300 people, they imagine, and so very positive things for sure. But back to the Cuba thing and how we lose a segment of the population just by mentioning the word Cuba, you know, that can be overcome.
Absolutely. I
mean, as people come to know about our common interests and the things that we can learn from each other. And
you know, the shame of it all, Preston, is that, it seems obvious that some sort of profound change will take place in Cuba probably within the next 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I loathe about the way we operate and the way we do business is, and I'm not playing prophet here, and I, you know, God's not whispering in my ear. This is merely an extrapolation into the future based upon observable facts in the immediate past. The first thing that will happen if the Cuban government changes, those people will lose their health care. They will lose their sustainability programs. They will lose their literacy programs because all of that will be deemed to be a function of evil communism. And the next thing, you know, because the plans are already in place. They're in place at General Cigar. They're in place at Coca-Cola and Pepsi. They're in place in the banking houses, Preston.
Yeah.
And all of that says that we're going to have to make sure that Cuba becomes a free market miracle. And the miracle of the free market is that anybody can survive in it. And it's very, very sad to contemplate.
Yeah. You know, and we also need to battle these imposed markets that go on in so many ways, you know, are imposing kind of our system, you know, not even America's system, but the system of these transnational conglomerates who have
right.
no loyalty to our country. And they certainly don't care much about other people. Say, like in Mexico, Walmart just opened like 300 stores there, and they are wiping out the small stores there. And that's people losing their livelihoods, the ma-and-pa stores. In fact, in Mexico, it's often the ma-and-pa and the kids running around the store and helping out. And it's fun. I mean, there's a vibrancy.
Yeah, and they've been doing it for 100 years in some instances.
That's right.
The little tiendas and, right.
And Walmart's wiping them out, and the profits are being sucked to Arkansas. So the Walton family,
the three siblings can have billions upon billions of dollars, impoverish these Mexicans, and they come up here risking their lives, and what they're very good at doing is pitting us against them instead of getting us united in solidarity to look at the super rich who are ripping us all off.
Well, you know, I heard that said very eloquently a couple of weeks ago. I heard a man speaking, and he said, I need to explain something to you. He said, there is a class war going on in this country, but the class war is not the rich against the poor. The class war is the extremely rich against the rich, the middle class, and the lower class.
That's right.
I'd never contemplated it in that perspective, Preston, but there's truth in it, because the economic policy that we're pursuing in this country is not, you know, I guess you're designated rich if you make more than $100,000 a year, or, you know, one of those benchmarks.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, the money is concentrated in the, and the best example of this was in David K. Johnston's book, Perfectly Legal.
Yeah.
The money is concentrated in the top 0.1%
yep.
of this country. And that is who we're servicing. And it is the Walton heirs. And it's the guy who runs Goldman Sachs who just got a $50 million Christmas bonus, for the love of God. Christmas bonus, Preston.
I heard about that. And I heard the average worker there at Goldman Sachs was getting a $100,000 bonus. And again, they're getting a lot of their money from things like, Mexico and other countries being forced into these impossible debt arrangements. I mean, we may know it ourselves on a personal level through Visa, MasterCard, the rates, the increases, the fees, the late fees, all that stuff, how it's harming our own personal home economies. But these other countries that are dealing with it on a national level, again, the exploitation is a real crime. And if, we claim to be such a Christian country, and I think we know what the Bible said, something about interest and things like that.
Yeah, that whole usury thing just sort of went by the boards, didn't it?
It sure did. It sure did. But one last thing on making it in the capitalist system, kind of more free market. I was so happy to see Al Gore's film, An Inconvenient Truth, sold over a million copies in its first week.
And you know what? And I heard him talking to Ellen DeGeneres earlier today.
Oh, great.
And they were talking about the, will you run, blah, blah, blah. And he said, I'm kind of working on a different model right now. And the fact of the matter, everybody talks about the bully pulpit of the president. But yeah. Al Gore may have actually had developed a greater bully pulpit with that film than any other, because I'm sure you saw, Preston, the profound level of negative PR that continues to circulate about the film, but it is apparently not affecting the fact that Americans want to make their own decisions about it.
Yeah.
And as a consequence, they're watching it. And the thing about An Inconvenient Truth is that if 0.1%, there's that fraction again, if 0.1% of what's in An Inconvenient Truth is true,
yep.
then
right.
action must be taken now. If the whole thing is true, then people should be in the streets screaming.
That's right. It would be very prudent for us to take precautions, just as we do regarding terrorism. There are these environmental security issues that we should be taking precautions toward. And, the thing about Al Gore not running for an official office, that's what I mean. If the formal political channels may not turn everybody on, there are these other channels that we have available to us. And I think...
Absolutely. One of the things that one of the groups that I think about that has really changed my life and our life here as a family is Coal River Mountain Watch. I've never been involved with people that I've been so proud to know as these folks. And because of the fact that they're a 501c3 charitable organization, they can't take stands on political candidates. And I have never met people in my life more scrupulous about observing that rule. But you know what? They're changing minds and they're changing attitudes one knock on the door at a time.
Great. Great. One last thing I wanted to mention regarding Al Gore's movie. I was looking at the customer reviews that people write up on Amazon, and the last one that I read was by a self-proclaimed right-wing guy who's a Marine, and he happens to be living in Japan, and he wrote about how he experienced the 7 of the last 10 typhoons that hit Japan. It was a record typhoon year, and he wrote a just fantastic review of that film. And so people are reaching not only liberals and progressives and other environmentalists, but, yeah, people on the so-called other side, again, mm-hmm. recognizing our commonalities again. I think it's going to be a powerful force.
I think you're absolutely right. Preston, I wish you a very, very happy holiday season. Don't be such a stranger, okay?
You too, Bob. You bet. I'll be in touch.
All right, and as you go back and forth to Asheville, travel safely.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Bye now.
Peace.
Our good friend Preston in Denver. You know, I'm just amazed by the reach and the scope of what happens here and the commitment of people. This is a life-changing experience for us. You know, I don't know what happens when the reason you turn on the mic is $25 million a year. But I know what happens when the reason you turn on the mic is $25,000 or $250,000 or $25 million committed human beings. And therein lies the difference. Let's go back. Let's keep this rolling. You know, the weekend's coming. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Well, after all that, I have nothing further to say other than what Oscar Wilde said about, you know, the way I feel about football, the way Oscar Wilde felt about fox hunting, the unmentionable in pursuit of the inedible.
What do you mean?
Just exactly what I said.
Well, no, I mean, we weren't talking about football, Preston.
I know, but earlier you were. But, I mean, after all of what I've said, I have nothing further to add, really.
Okay.
What you said. So, right. Bene, optimum est.
Indeed. Thank you, Jim. Very good weekend to you. Take care. Some people don't like football and don't like it when I talk about it. I'm sorry. I'll try to learn macrame or something. Let's talk to Chris down in Alabama. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
You keep right on talking about football. It's freedom of speech, brother. You go ahead. Rave on.
God bless you.
And I'll defend you with my voice till it runs out. Preston. What an amazing call. What an amazing call. Preston was my grandfather's name, and it's great to hear it. Great to hear it. Bob Barker's retiring. Rumsfeld's out of a job. Maybe they're going to switch. Maybe Barker is going to, I don't know, we've got an office somewhere in Sudan. I can see Barker, over there, and I can see Rumsfeld. You know, they call the name. Come on down. You know, if you want to come on down.
You're the next contestant on The War is Right.
Yeah, The War is Right. You can come down. I told you to come down. You can write about it. You can put it down there. You can put it in your little thing. You can guess the money. I already told you about it. Who knows?
I love the way your mind works.
Oh, hey, it's
all without medication. I mean, you know.
Well, you know, I'm on some anti-seizure medicine. It's really working too, praise the Lord. But
we're glad.
Nobody more than me. But the reason you do this show. The reason you've always said it's not for $25 million. If you had $25 million, I know you well enough to know you, it would cause you so much stress that you would be breaking out if you had that. You would get rid of it as fast as you could. I know you, but it would be like at the end of Sneakers. Also in the news, the United Negro College Fund, Greenpeace, reported record donations. I could see that happening.
But you know what?
Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great?
Oh, you know, I knew the Friday show would end with something like this.
You know, just somebody comes up and says, "Bob, I've got all this money, and I just don't want it. Here, take it." And Bob comes on the show that night and goes, "Well, we've got a great announcement. We never thought we'd make this, but several charities are going to be really happy Monday morning."
Yeah, it would be, and that's you know, I don't know, maybe it's a function of human growth, Chris.
We found a great way to advertise the show and really help people at the same time.
Well, I used to think in terms of, boy, if I had $1 million, and I got a little bit of that left because every now and then I do go to Porsche.com and they've got that build your own Porsche thing.
You know where?
And then you see the price tag on it, and you go, no.
I go to Log Cabin Home Plan Designs.
Yeah, see, I've done that too.
And my wife works for an architect, and I know that it's a little over $100 a square foot now, and I know it's not ever going to happen.
Well, but see, I can't let go of the hope, you know, and I don't think you should either, because the way you write,
Well, I've got a cereal that I'm going right now, and a friend of mine's
website, Fruit Loops.
Jazz Band Chronicles.
I'm kidding.
And it's a fictional piece about Iraq.
Jazz Man Chronicles?
Yeah.
.com?
Jazzbandchronicles.blogspot.com.
Okay. And you've got that rolling there?
Yeah, he's published the first four little bits from it. And five and six I've sent him and he hasn't put up yet.
Okay.
But it's approaching Gonzo. But not really, but it's definitely going to get there.
Yeah, Gonzo with a side of beans and cornbread.
Yeah, and one more thing. If you want to watch Hunter Thompson, right now, if you Google Hunter Thompson and you click on the video, you can go and you can watch the three or four different episodes that Hunter was on Charlie Rose's show.
Oh, wow.
If you have a good enough connection, you can watch it on Google Video.
I'm going to go and do that. Chris, we got to roll on. Everything all set for the holidays there?
Yeah. One of these, right before the holiday, when we get some money, we're going to go buy gifts, and hey, you get what you get.
Well, I know that Carrie's psyched for it, and you guys will do the best that you can.
She's been in the Japanese... rock and roll, and I ordered her some CDs, and they're going to be here in late January.
Oh, that's neat. You know, you're doing a great job with her.
Hey.
The only girl in the Lauderdale County school system into Japanese rock and roll, you are doing the right thing.
And she loves Ravi Shankar, so what do?
You get her some Ravi Shankar.
Reading Basho. So, hey, what can you do?
Whatever you can do, it's apparently you are doing, and you're doing it right, Chris.
Well, I'm trying to stay with her.
Yeah, running to stand still, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Hey, Chris, you guys do have a happy holiday, all right?
You too.
Take care.
Well, brother.
All right, bye now. Okay, so that's it. Thanks, everybody. What a wonderful show. You never cease to amaze me. And what you do for our lives, you don't know. The show, of course, tonight was produced by my lovely, darling, talented wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. Engineered by John Fox, all the way from Sydney, Australia. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasts of everything on the Head On Radio Network. Our IT professional is Peter, we hope he's feeling better, Godbold at Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida. Every program on the horn happens because of the dedication of many thousands of members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They go out and they build the American dream every day. And when they do that, they're able to support this network, and that makes us able to help save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.